coming to you from high atop our studios in the San Francisco Bay Area, you're listening to Tech Move. This is episode 19. In today's show, we welcome back Keith, who makes his triumphant return back from NAB 2015 representing Tech Move. We'll talk all about the experience, the people, and the gear. Plus, we'll have some breaking news to share. I'm Rod Louie, and with me is Keith Moreau. Get ready. It's time for another exciting episode of Tech Move. Let's go. Fresh on the heels of NAB 2015, where by now the whole show has wrapped up, we welcome back to the Tech Move world, Keith Moreau. Keith, how's it going?
It's great. It's great to be back on at our headquarters in the San Francisco Bay Area, high atop the peaks, looking over, seeing the fog rolling in. It's great to be back.
Rather than the heat and dust of Las Vegas, is that correct?
Lost. Yeah. It was pretty hot. It was pretty dusty. It was pretty windy. Mostly wanted to stay inside when I was there.
Well, and you know, and that's the main thing, because you know, being at NAB, I'm sure that's really your only option. There's got to be so much to see, and of which we'll be covering here on this special episode dedicated to the NAB 2015. But first of all, welcome back.
Thank you.
And glad to have you back. Glad you made it back safely. Mm-hmm. And just want to say that we've got a ton of stuff that we want to cover today. And we are excited to bring you a whole bunch of cool information, some blockbuster news, and all kinds of neat stuff that Keith found out while digging around and spying on companies while over at NAB. So, Keith, your assignment is finished. Let's report on what happened at NAB 2015.
Okay. Well, Veronica, my girlfriend, and I, and production and Tech Move production assistant, shall I
right.
say?
production assistant, Veronica.
She and I stayed at the Mandarin Oriental Hotel, and if you haven't heard of that hotel, it's actually an amazing hotel.
I believe we have one here in San Francisco.
Really, Mandarin Oriental?
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
Yep. I think it's down on like somewhere around Sansom or something like that, I want to say. But well, anywho.
Yeah, and I chose it. It was kind of random in a way, because I actually wanted to get a hotel that was really close to NAB. But actually, a lot of them were booked even though I booked the hotels like 3 or 4 months ago. But this one looked really good. And the thing that looked pretty cool about this is there were no casinos in it. It's just a very...
Well, then why go, for crying out loud?
I'm not really into gambling, and she's right. Not really into gambling. So, but actually, it just turned out to be a great choice, and I'd definitely go back there. It's just, if you have a chance, Rod, you should check it out.
The Mandarin Oriental Hotel is a beautiful, beautiful collection of hotels located around the world. Mm. And yes, they are located in San Francisco as well, and I was correct on Sansom Street, correct as I usually am. Yeah. But anyway, with this Las Vegas one, they have a certain standard there, so it must have been just fantastic.
It was fantastic, and it kind of seemed like you weren't, when you were in the hotel, you weren't actually in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
It was just very rarefied. I mean, it just smelled great. It's just kind of a new agey, kind of Asian thing. You know, they have a spa in it, and they have all these great restaurants in it, and the views are great, and all the decoration. It's I'd highly recommend it.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those places where I'm sure you can just open up your luggage and never need to leave.
If you didn't want to leave the hotel, that would be fine.
Yeah, you could just stay there and relax. Yeah. And
eventually, you'd run out of money, but
right,
because it's not cheap.
Nothing in Vegas is that, but yes, this one in particular is of that ilk.
It's
yes.
up there, but it's worth it. It's worth it for the experience. But anyway, so we got there on Saturday, kind of actually in the middle of the day. But by the time we unpacked and kind of checked stuff out, there really wasn't that much time to go to the NAB show to see what might have been there. So we actually went the next day early.
May I back up for mm-hmm. just one moment? Because this is one thing that fascinates me throughout traveling in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. And that is, first of all, let me ask you, did you rent a car?
No, I decided I did not want to rent a car. I didn't want to have to deal with that.
That is an excellent decision because sometimes obtaining a rental car in Las Vegas can take upwards of the entire time you're scheduled to stay there.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, it's a long thing. Anyway, well, that's a great. So, what, you took cabs or whatever?
Yeah, we took cabs. We actually, you know, what's kind of cool is anybody actually has a shuttle that goes all day to various hotels.
Oh, and, yeah. That's nice. Yeah. And it was even running on Saturday, Sunday?
No, it wasn't.
So when you arrived, you had to
hitchhike
yourself.
Yeah, and we actually like to exercise and we like to walk. So we just decided to kind of get a feeling for Las Vegas by walking from our hotel to the Las Vegas Convention Center. And then when we told the bellman when we were leaving, he said, "How are you going to get there?" I said, "Well, we're just going to walk." What? Right. It was like he actually just immediately ran to his kiosk of waters, you know, bottled waters, and you're going to need this.
And Ace bandages to tape up your ankles.
Yeah, all kinds of travel aids, little emergency beepers and other things. But we looked at the map and we knew that we could do it. So we walked. But walking in Vegas is a little tedious because you can't just walk straight to a place.
Right.
You have to kind of use all these overpasses and things and go backwards and forwards and backtrack. And so it probably took about an hour and a half to walk there.
is the Mandarin on the strip itself or is it away from the strip?
It's actually pretty much right on the strip.
Okay.
But right. It's weird because I think there's kind of a space issue in Las Vegas, which is kind of odd, but in some cases there's just not a lot of space to build hotels now that are centrally located. So they're starting to build upward. They're starting to build a lot of skyscraper type hotels. Yep. And that's this one. So yep, it's pretty exactly. tall, but it's not that large of a hotel.
Right.
It's kind of in the middle of everything.
Right. It's just tall.
Just tall. And it's just kind of tucked in. So we walked and we kind of got a little bit of the feeling of Las Vegas and, you know, a feeling that we don't necessarily, you know, like that much, but
yeah,
with sure. all the, you know, passing by a casino and like all the smoke blowing out towards us and choking.
Oh yeah, sure.
But
and the 20 some odd year olds that are just out there to get blasted beyond belief.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, but you know, there's some good and bad things. There's some interesting little, you know, oases along the way. But we eventually made it. We got in there. We were a little. It's so huge. The Las Vegas Convention Center is just gigantic, and you're not quite sure where to go. But we went into the main kind of entrance hallway and immediately went to get register as press.
Right.
So we went up to the press room. I think I might've texted you a photo of that press room.
I did see it and it was fantastic. And it was great. Did they ask for if I was joining you?
They were really disappointed that you weren't there.
Ah, I'm sure of it.
Gave them
I'm
our, sure. And they said, wait a second, where's Rod? They were like looking around, looking behind us. They were sent people out to find you.
Well, I hope you got my presidential suite.
That came in handy. Thank you.
Good.
Your connections
you're
really...
No, you're
yeah.
very welcome.
Yeah.
Very, very
diplomatic
welcome.
Connections really help out, Rod.
Right, exactly.
But the press room was honestly kind of depressing. It was gigantic.
Just a bunch of tables, just a bunch of tables, chairs, and that's about it.
Yeah, it's a bunch of tables, chairs, stuff written on the wall, press releases taped up to the wall, bunch of not very happy looking people at their computers, kind of sweating, you know, trying to get the next story, I guess, or I don't know what they were doing. So that was actually the first and last time we were in the press room.
Oh, is that right? You did not go in there for any real pressing.
There was no reason for us to go in there.
Right.
You know, all the information. I mean, it's like we don't have to be there for the first second of some major announcement.
Right.
And, you know, and also most of the vendors that we were exhibitors were interested in, you know, we knew what they were going to be announcing that day, that Monday. So
the picture that you sent me reminded, I actually thought for a moment that you were there for an Amway demonstration. So yeah. I thought you were going to come back and sell me a bunch of paper towel products.
Yeah, and they make a big thing of, you know, free Wi-Fi and free refreshments and stuff like that for the press. And there's just like a little table and with some coffee and, you know, donuts on it. And
at least the donuts might have been good, but
and the Wi-Fi was like you could never get on it. Right. So, or it was like one bit per minute speeds. Right. So. No, actually, that's not true. We actually did use their Wi-Fi a lot later, and I'll tell you what we actually wound up doing for a lot of the show. Our main, so there's this show that's done by Geek Beat TV.
And do you know
Kelly Lewis?
I don't know her.
Oh, okay. She's kind of a semi-famous podcaster for years, and she has this show called Geek Beat TV.
Okay.
And anyway, she's there and a bunch of other people that you might hear on podcasts or see on video podcasts or video kind of tech channels like Tech TV or Revision 3 or those channels.
I know them.
Yeah. So there was kind of like a little open air studio there. And so they had a kind of a panel that would fit three people. And then two of them were usually hosts and then they usually had a third, which was a guest. And they just ran this continuous live broadcast to the Geek Beat channel, the whole show.
Oh, neat.
Yeah. But in the audience, there were a bunch of tables, and two of the tables had six chairs and six spots to essentially sit down and plug in and recharge your stuff. And it had these really neat little adapters that had all the different types of connectors you might need to charge your device. So they had the lightning connectors and the old iPod connectors, and they had the USB micro connectors and all these things and these little kind of fan-like octopuses. In the middle of the table.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
And what's cool is, what's kind of interesting is that these people were just the broadcasters were continually, you know, having this show, but most of the audience wasn't even paying attention to them. Like we were just all talking to each other and having meetings and charging our devices and doing other stuff and kind of ignoring this probably pretty good show that was going on.
I guess they probably figure, they'll come back to this just like our listeners are doing right now, too. back to this.
Our listeners are plugging in, charging, not even listening to us. Yeah, you're right. It's exactly the same.
Right. even though GeekBeak probably spent a fortune doing live streaming and stuff like that, right?
Oh, yeah. That was actually pretty... major production. They have all these remotely mounted cameras up a little bit, like 8 feet high, just out of reach, all along the edge, so they could change angles and zoom in and kind of remotely pan them if they needed to.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and then they had a pretty big monitor of what was actually showing up there. So, but it was kind of cool because I saw a lot of the people that I in person and live that I only see on TV. So,
very good.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. That was actually...
Well, just like our fine listeners were able to do with you, see you live and in person, which is nice, especially important for our throngs of fans in the tech move world.
Yeah, I actually had to wear a disguise most of the time.
That's right. That's right.
No, I actually did get a chance to meet some fans, which is great.
Great.
Yeah, it's nice to get that feedback.
No, that's great. That is awesome. How about, okay, what, you went there on your first official day was the Sunday, right? When you went into the press room and stuff like that.
Yeah.
At that particular point, were there a lot of people in the convention center or not really?
It really
doesn't officially start until Monday, correct?
Correct. Although they do have sessions even starting on Saturday. They have this whole learning thing. They have tons of rooms that have projectors in them and large audience areas. And so actually a lot of the rooms and a lot of people were there for this kind of learning track as well. You can pay a lot of money and get a learning track. As press, I actually had access to all of that, which was great.
Nice.
Yeah. I didn't use very much of it, But because there weren't really any exhibitors open, I actually did, on that Sunday, I did watch a few of them. So, or at least parts of a few of them. A couple of them, they looked interesting, but then when I got there, I realized I pretty much knew everything that they were talking about and probably could give the seminar myself. But in fact, a lot of the things they would say, I just, no, that's not right.
Right.
You're wrong. Get off the stage.
So were they kind of like workshops and stuff like that?
Yeah, they were workshops. Actually, yeah. The one that I thought was really good was done by the guy that runs the C-47. And I think I posted a little Twitter. I did a Twitter feed. It was actually kind of cool because I don't do Twitter that much.
Right.
And so I kind of learned how to do Twitter on this trip too. Like really do it well.
Yeah. I for one really enjoyed it. I thought that worked out really, really well.
Yeah. And if anybody's listening to it and wants to see the Twitter feed, it's not super lively right now, but you can go into the past and look us up. It's just at Tech Move Podcast. So you can just check that out on Twitter. But the guy that I liked, I only was there for about an hour, but his name is Jim Schofield, and he has a website called thec47.com. And I actually like his website. He doesn't do a lot of stuff nowadays because I think he's kind of busy, but he has a lot of great information on gear and stuff, and he has this little room where he does demos and kind of talks about stuff. But he actually, you know, I think he's kind of gotten the attention of a lot of the manufacturers now, and he's done a bunch of stuff for like Canon and Westcott and a bunch of other companies. You know, like I think they hire him to be an expert because he's pretty technical and actually pretty artistic too. So if you looked at any of the Canon C300 Mark II kind of promos, he actually did the behind the scenes filming of those. So nice. I guess Canon hired him for that. Anyway, I went up to him, I met him, introduced myself, and we tried to arrange an interview, but it just didn't work out with our timing. But we'll probably have him on a future podcast because he's actually, I think he'd be a good guy for us to have on our show.
Excellent.
Yeah. But
look forward to that.
Yeah. And then there was another one on how to do 4K workflow, and I didn't think that was all that great. There was another one that I thought it was going to be really excellent called how to make a killer demo reel.
Oh yeah.
And I think it seemed like a last minute put together because it seemed like he just didn't have it together. Like a lot of stuff he tried to play didn't work well. Like he tried
I hate that. Oh, yeah. I hate that.
Yeah. He was trying to rely on, I guess, the Wi-Fi there or something. Things weren't playing. And so and he played a lot of stuff that other people made kind of as examples. Which is great, but, you know, I can just do that by going to Vimeo, you know?
Right.
I don't have to go to an AB to see this.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
That's right.
So, I think there probably were some great, great conferences there, sessions, but I didn't have really the time to see too many of them. But, like, one out of three were okay for me. Like,
awesome.
I learned something. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, but then we had extra time in between some of these conferences on Sunday, so Veronica and I decided to just walk around and see where we wanted to definitely interview some of these exhibitors. And so we went to where they were located and looked at their setup so we can kind of get a scope it out. The Canon was one of the primary ones I wanted to interview. So I actually went to their area, and their area was still being constructed. And this was like Sunday, not that early on Sunday.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and actually there's a little Twitter video, and we might even put it on our website, of me just talking in front of this gigantic Canon kiosk. And
I saw it. And I think all the material we should make available on our website too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hopefully that's not too hard to do.
No, I don't think so. But it was kind of cool just being there while all this stuff was being put up. You know, it was kind of ugly. You know, it didn't look pretty, but it's the behind the scenes thing that's pretty cool. You know, we had to kind of get out of the way of the forklifts and the cranes and all the different things that were constructing these things. And it seemed kind of dangerous in some cases. You know, there was like power wires and things. And I was, you know, I thought at any moment I would just be kicked out. You know, because I was actually just talking to this microphone to Veronica filming me,
right?
But nobody cared, you know.
Yeah.
So that part was good. And actually, that kind of brings me to how we recorded the video and audio of these interviews, and just in general. So one of the things that I, so Veronica's not a professional camera person, but she's, you know, she's got a good eye. But one of the things about just in general is when you have a small camcorder, there's a lot of things that you can kind of screw up because just looking at it, it's just the viewfinder is so small. Like you can't tell if things are in focus or the exposure or framing. It's much harder when you have a really small screen.
That's right.
Yeah. So I kind of made the decision early that since Veronica was going to do it, she'd have a much better shot of getting a good image by just having an iPad. And it wasn't like we needed the superlative quality of a DSLR or something like that or a small camcorder. So, and the convenience of having essentially the viewfinder being the device and a pretty, yeah. you know, like a 10 inch or so screen outweighed any other maybe technical benefits of it. So the only issue was how do I get good sound into it? Because I wanted to have a good mic and have a XLR mic plugged into it. And I should have planned on this a long time ago, but I didn't. I waited till the last minute. And
you and all the exhibitors at NAB.
So the morning, actually that Saturday morning before I left, I actually cobbled together a DIY adapter to make the XLR output of this microphone work and go into the iPad.
Oh,
and
so you made this adapter yourself?
Well, I basically just plugged a few existing cables and adapters I had into each other to kind of make it work.
So you increased the iPad weight by about 5 pounds, is that correct? And then having all these things dangle out of the charge port where it could probably damage everything.
Yeah, I increased the risk and weight factor by a factor of 20. No, it wasn't too bad. So I have a really nice microphone. It's actually not a new microphone. It's one I used to use when I used to sing in a band. But the reason I got it was it's a super hypercardioid type pattern. Like it's really directional. It's almost like a shotgun mic.
Yeah.
And it's called the AKG C1000S. And the thing that's cool about this is it's either phantom power powered or it's battery powered. It's got a 9-volt battery in it, receptacle in it too. So in this case, I didn't have phantom power. The iPad doesn't have phantom power. So I just used the battery, the onboard battery, and then had the XLR going out. And then I had that to an XLR to a what is actually a normally used for a camcorder. It's an AV cable. So if you look at some of the cables, like if you look at, do you have any like headsets that plug into your iPhone?
Oh, plenty.
Yeah. So if you look at
the 1/8 inch,
yeah,
little stereo jack.
Right. And
yep. What's available on every cell phone right now, essentially.
Right. But the thing is that there's also a mic connector as well. So if you just put regular headphones in, it's fine. The mic connector there's no real actual connector on that for headphones.
Right.
But if you put headphones that have a mic in it as well, then the microphone, essentially the input, the sound input to the iPad is actually a little, it's one of the rings on the 8-inch
That's right.
connector.
To have the microphone, ladies and gentlemen, you got to have the 3-ringed male 8-inch inch connector.
Correct. Yeah. So it's kind of a common connector. It's considered an AV connector. So it's used in a lot of camcorders and other analog devices in the past. Like it's more of an older connector, but it's used to carry both the audio stereo left and right and the video signal. So that video signal is that fourth band in there. Well, what I did was I made an adapter and I plugged it into what normally is the video part of the cable. But in this case, for an iPad or an iPhone, it's the audio input.
Right.
So I just fashioned this connector and I tested it out at home and lo and behold, it worked.
Yeah.
The only thing that didn't work was headphone monitoring. For some reason, I think it's possible to hear back what you're recording, but for some reason this connector didn't work, this self-made one. There's other ones that are out there that supposedly do this, you can pre-buy. I just didn't have time to buy it. I tried to order one and have it sent direct to the hotel, and it would have gotten to me too late, so that wouldn't work. So I just had to use this kind of DIY thing.
Right.
And it was also it seemed a little unreliable, which I didn't realize until I listened to one of the interviews, one of the early interviews, luckily.
Right.
And I heard some dropouts, and then I spent a lot of time trying to figure out why it was dropping out. And I think it was just because the connector was slightly, it's you know, these plug-in connectors, they're not very positive, and if you just slightly pull it out a little bit, it'll disconnect.
That's
and,
right.
Yeah. So
especially if you're interconnecting, you know, another adapter to it.
Right. And I had like three in a row.
Yeah. So there, it could have been in any one of that chain.
Yeah. And I kind of figured it out after when we went to our little resting area at the Geek Beat TV studio. I troubleshot it, you know, and kind of figured out this is one connector that was the most unreliable. So I just made sure that before each interview, I kind of played with it and made sure it was tight.
Could you, a la Roger Daltrey, could you have used like electrical tape, taped it together for a more sure connection?
Darn, should have thought of that. No. You know, it was funny. I didn't want to tape it and commit to having a secure connection, because what if I taped it and it got stuck into the bad state?
Right.
And because Veronica mentioned the same thing, why don't you just tape it up?
Yeah.
And I said, nah, you know, I want to be able to kind of jiggle it and make it work if it's not working. If it's taped, it might be harder to do that.
Yeah, that makes total sense.
Yeah, but actually, I think she was right. And
yeah, I think tape would have been better.
So what happened was, by the time I think we did the second or third interview, this was actually Eric Kessler. And he was really nice, because we told him we were kind of troubleshooting our audio. And he said, well, you want some gaffer's tape? I'll get you some. He's just a really nice guy.
Yeah.
Like, so, you know, he's like the head of this huge company. He's like taping up my microphone cable. So
did he provide you gaffer tape?
Yeah, he did. He taped it up.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, he taped it up for me. And actually after that, it was really reliable. So I guess the taping was the best thing to do.
And I do have to say, you know, having listened to all the interviews already, it sounded great after that initial little prob. And you know, the prob also was just a short little itty bitty bit. You know, it's just one of those things where it kind of comes in and out. And it's not for very long and stuff like that, but
yeah. And the thing too is, if Veronica had headphone monitoring on it, she could have known when that was happening. But we were just kind of hoping the sound was going to be good.
Sure, sure.
So
no, you know, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Okay, we're talking about, you know, shooting this material on the iPad and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you why you did not use your iPhone 6 Plus.
It has to do with just the screen size. It's just a smaller monitor.
Okay.
So if you're using the iPad, you have this pretty big monitor. You can tell when stuff's in focus and framing. On a littler thing, it's harder to tell, especially for somebody that's not a professional.
Right.
You know, like I'm used to looking at teeny little screens and kind of making it work, but Veronica's doesn't have that experience. So I just wanted to make it as foolproof as possible for her, so that there was a better chance for getting a good shot. And
there was something in the footage, and, you know, some people may see it, they may not, but Rod Louie is a trained eye on this. And that is, you know, when shooting with the iPad, iPhone, any one of these point-and-shoot type of things, you know, your center area is the focus target, correct?
Actually, with the newest version of iOS, it's actually a little bit more controllable than it used to be.
Oh, really? Because that's what I was going to ask, and I'm too afraid to update to new iOS. So
I wouldn't do it with your ancient collectible iPhone.
I have the iPad 3?
I'm
talking about I have the iPad 3.
Oh.
Or what they call... What is it? The new iPad.
The new iPad.
Is now like 90 years old by now.
The new iPad 3 that's about 2 years old.
Correct.
Yeah. That might work on that one. So here's another thing. Because we couldn't really monitor the sound, I actually started using a different app for recording the video. And I've had this app forever. It's actually a great app for video if you're into it. It's called Filmic Pro.
Filmic Pro.
Yeah. It's not very expensive. And it's actually... The thing that's cool about it actually has little audio meters on it. So even if she couldn't hear the sound, when I tapped the mic, she could see that it was actually making a connection. That it wasn't just using like the room, like the either no sound at all or just the built-in mic on the iPad.
Oh, that's very handy.
Yeah. So before we start each recording, I just tap it and she'd note that it was making a little peaky thing on the view meter, on the bar meter that's on there. On Filmic Pro, and so she'd know it was recording at that point, or that the connection was good at that point. Yeah, and that's kind of how we verified it. It's not, you know, you just have to go with what works.
Sure.
It's not the best thing. We should have had headphone monitoring. I should have gotten this adapter thing like a month before and tested it, but I just didn't. So, you know, luckily it kind of, most of it kind of worked.
Well, you know what? And that it did do exactly that. It worked, and it worked really, really well. So, oh,
well, thank you. And she did a great job. Yeah. And she did a great job. She's a trooper out there. She had her, her LV purse in on one shoulder and my coach man purse on the other shoulder.
Right. And holding the equipment, right? And holding the equipment with this makeshift DIY adapter
dangling
off the iPad.
Yeah, we kind of, and it was kind of interesting because we were always fearful that somebody would walk through the shot and trip over the adapter and destroy everything.
Right.
You know, like just trip and right. like fall into the $3,000 camera that we were talking about.
Exactly.
but actually what was kind of cool is that most of the time people avoid it. There was only one time that somebody just walked right through the shot. And you probably see that. I can't remember which one it was, but it's okay. It was.
You know, actually, I didn't see it, which means I must have just fast forwarded through it because I didn't notice it at all.
Well, actually, you know what? We should have a contest, and the listener who can identify that interview gets something.
And not the sure something, what. And the something they get is the unedited version of the interview. well, that's great. Yeah. Well, thanks for the great recording. Cause I thought that, you know, and that AKG mic really turned out great because I did notice on a couple of the times, you know, you're using the mic, as a handheld essentially, which I'm sure it's really not designed for.
It's probably not. Well, you know what?
It looks like it's more mic stand based, you know, for recording type of thing.
Not really
live application.
I'm not sure. You know, probably it's not been designed for what I necessarily for what I did, but it actually worked okay because
oh, worked great.
Yeah, because it didn't have much handling noise because I was holding it, so I didn't hear any handling noise. So it's got good isolation, and it's super directional, and it sounds really good. It's really high fidelity.
And you didn't have to have it up to their like nostrils in order to hear them. You had it at a very nice, comfortable, you know, distance from them, and it picked up the sound just great. So it was really, really nice.
Thanks. And that actually was another conscious choice, which was, do we, you know, mic them up and put a lav on them and do all this stuff? And I said, no, we're going to be doing this under pressure.
This is total run and gun.
Yeah, yeah. We just need to get in there. I need to control, you know, the direction of the mic quickly. We need to go wired rather than wireless because that's more complicated and more error prone. Yeah, so I just try to keep it simple, simple, simple. And I think it worked pretty well. And I think that mic is really cool because it really rejects the off-axis noise. It was really noisy there. But if you listen to the interviews, they're really clear. It's almost like they're in the studio.
No, it sounded like you had the whole place to yourselves and just giving an actual studio interview, which was great.
Yeah, it was amazing. I was actually kind of amazed just listening back how isolated they sounded because like 2 feet away from us, there were huge noises, you know, like pinball machine games that they were doing at their booth and really noisy stuff, people yelling. And most of the time, you can't even hear that stuff. Yeah. I'm really glad that worked out. It just sometimes things just work out.
that is terrific. That is great.
Oh yeah, I want to tell you one little story I forgot to tell you about. So on our first day, we took a cab ride from our hotel, and there was a guy in front of us, and the bellman said, "Do you want to share a cab?" You know, this guy in front, he's an older guy, and I said, yeah, we're both going NAB, and I saw him stuffing his NAB badge into his pocket, and I didn't get a chance to see it before he stuffed it in.
Right.
But I did kind of say, oh, you're an NAB, and he kind of like nodded. It seemed like he didn't really want to talk about it.
Sure.
So I didn't really, you know, press him on it, but we got into the
car. Was this President Barack Obama you're talking about?
No. No. He had a German accent.
Ah,
so,
okay.
All right. Yeah. So we went in the car, and Veronica and I were in the car. And he was in the back seat, and he was in the front seat on his own. And so we just kind of started talking, and I just said, "So who are you with? Are you an exhibitor at the show?" And he says, "Yeah." And I said, "So who are you with?" He says, "Well, I'm with Leica." I said, "Oh, great! I love Leica. I think they make great lenses, and their cameras are legendary." And I said, "So what do you do for Leica?" And he says, "Well, I'm actually the owner of Leica.
You mean you met Mr. Leica?
I met Mr. Leica. His name is not Leica. It's something else. Mm-hmm. Let me see. He actually gave me his card. Oh, yeah. He... And we're going to have to edit this because I'm looking at his card, like trying to find his card.
His name is probably like Lee Jones or something.
No.
Just came up with this cool name, Leica.
Yeah. So he, at the end, when we got out of the car, he actually gave me his card. And he was actually, became really nice. And we talked a lot about lenses and stuff. And they're trying to get into cinema lenses and they have primes right now. And he talked a lot about the technology and all the people and, it was pretty cool, but his name is Dr. Andreas Kaufman. So
very close to Leica. similar yeah. in sound.
And his title is Chairman of the Supervisory Board. So I guess
now isn't Leica a company that's been around for like many years, or is it just many years? Is he the actual founder of the company?
I don't think he's the founder. He's probably just somebody who, I have no idea what his.
Maybe his grandpa or something like that was Mr. Leica.
Maybe okay. It was Mr. Leica, or maybe just bought into the company. I'm not sure. Maybe we'll have him on the show sometime. We'll ask him.
Right.
How did you become the owner of Leica? Mr. Leica.
And why don't you have your own private driver? Why are you taking some random, like, free ride?
Yeah, why are you sharing a ride with me? Can't you afford your cab, Mr. Leica?
Right. Tech Move is on a budget. You're not.
But actually, it worked out great, and that was the start of a pretty great day.
That's pretty awesome. No, that it's neat when you can have those, you know, neat little interviews and just one-offs and stuff like that. That is really, really cool.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. So, so why don't we listen to some of the interviews?
Let's do this. Let's do this. Let's take a little quick break. Let's reset everything that we need. And we are going to get into some of these great interviews that Keith was able to nab at NAB. Get that? Thank you very much. You can use that all day long, but you got to pay me a royalty. So we're going to take a quick break here and get everything all set up, and then we're going to jump right into some of these interviews that Keith has done. And after that, we will review and talk about any last-minute things that Keith came away with from NAB 2015. We've got that and a whole bunch more, so you just sit tight, and we'll be back with more Tech Move. So for our first interview we're going to share with you that Keith conducted, we're going to talk to a gentleman by the name of Wes Phillips of Small HD. And Keith, tell me how you secured this interview with Wes.
Well, actually, one of the things I did want to do was find out about the Sidefinder. So on Sunday, we actually did go directly to the Small HD booth. And actually, they were one of the few booths that was really complete and set up. And I went to one of the folks there, and he gave me his card, and he said, you could probably come back in about half an hour, and we can do the interview here. And I thought that would be good, because rather than have all the commotion of all the real people, the show attendees there, have it a little more quiet environment, a little more control. But when we came back later, there was really there weren't that many people around. And then one of the guys there that was still there, his name is Wes Phillips. And it turned out that he was probably an even bigger catch than the original guy we were going to get, because he's actually the CEO of Small HD.
So you're saying that you were almost going to speak to just one of the other guys attending the show for Small HD,
yeah,
but instead you got the big cat, we like to say.
Got the CEO. Yeah,
and that's nice.
Yeah.
No offense to the other guy, but hey, Wes, you know, that's kind of nice to come from the top dog.
Yeah, and So they were totally booked. They didn't want to do it then on Sunday. They wanted to do it the next day. And so we looked through his schedule, and he had just a printed spreadsheet of, he has a marketing company that, our communications company, PR company that schedules their interviews. So we looked on the sheet, and he had a little blank spot around 11:30 on Monday. So I said, let's do it then. So the next day we showed up around 11:20. They had a nice little couch in the middle of their little couch and coffee table thing in the middle of their booth. And we sat down and actually kind of tested out our recording system. like one of the first times we really tested it to make sure it would work. And then we, about 10 minutes, and we met their communications person and talked a bit. And then we started the interview.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, let's listen to that interview right now. Let's get to it. And then we'll comment right after it's over with. So, ladies and gentlemen, here is Keith Moreau with Wes Phillips of Small HD right here on Tech Move.
Tech Move podcast. We're here at the Small HD booth, and we're here with Wes Phillips. He's the CEO of Small HD, and we're here for an exciting new product from Small HD. Hey, Wes.
Hey, Keith. You asked me to tell about the company a little bit, so I'm going to do that. So we started off as filmmakers and really launched Small HD after winning a couple of the Doritos Super Bowl ad contests. We've won two of them, which is really insane to me, but that really kind of actually launched us into the idea of making monitors to begin with, and then eventually we won cash to buy inventory for our really first successful product, the DP6, about 5 years ago, and we launched that.
I actually have the DP6. It's an excellent monitor.
It's a classic. So we're trying to bring that DP6 mojo back with our new product, the 502. So this is the 502. It's kind of our major upgrade to the DP6. It's got a full 1920 by 1080 resolution, so it's full HD. And we've really developed the user interface from the ground up. It's got this really cool page system that allows you to flip between different presets that are just these completely new pages, and I can show more of them to you that we've set up in advance, and you can just go through and quickly access these things and set them up, and over here you can add a new one and set up however you want. And so really it's just designed to make shooting a much faster process, to be able to check focus on one page, check exposure on another page, and then get back to your shot, take a look at a lookup table to see what it's going to look like in post. It's really, really fast. And the next thing that makes this monitor pretty incredible is the attachment of this Sidefinder product. This is basically converts the 502 into a high definition viewfinder, and it's it's a $300 add-on that makes this the highest resolution third party EVF on the market. So this product is a $1,200 product, so $1,199, and this the combined total is $1,499. So for $1,500, you're getting the highest resolution monitor or EVF and monitor on the market, and it really does truly operate as an EVF and a monitor. We've designed it so that it's very narrow on the camera side, and it's very fully featured, and it works really well from an EVF standpoint. We really spent a lot of time improving over our DP4 design from years ago, took a lot of lessons, a lot of good feedback on it, and implemented all of it into this product, and we're really proud of this.
That's great, Wes. So when is this product going to be out?
So we actually tried doing a thing where we announce a product and start shipping it at the same time, and we were partially successful with that. We are shipping the 502 today, starting today. You can get this monitor from smallhd.com and very soon in all of our distributors and resellers. And the EVF is coming a little bit later. We're saying it's shipping in the summer. We hope to be shipping around CineGear time. So there's just a couple more things to finish up on that. Really, it's just a manufacturing thing. So, but they're incoming, and we're very excited about it.
That's great, Wes. Well, thank you very much for the interview. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, too.
Great. Well, that's Wes Phillips, CEO of Small HD. Got a little bit of history there. Got a little bit of a demo on this exciting new product, the Sidefinder and the monitor. And I am Keith Moreau for TechMove. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Keith. And that was really a very, very nice one. Wes seems like a very nice guy.
He seems like a great guy, and he seems like a pretty genuine person, and it's, I kind of didn't remember it, but actually he was the winner of one of the Super Bowl Doritos film contests.
Yeah, like he mentions
it. Yeah, and that's, you know, that's a pretty interesting story. So,
and yeah. a pretty big deal. I mean, that's a big thing. That's a big little. I guess when he probably did. Do you think he was an amateur when he did that?
You know, I don't know.
For all the small HD stuff?
I'm not sure if he was or not. We'll have to, you know, dig deeper into his story at some point.
Yeah.
But
maybe we can hit him up for an interview or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. He'd probably be a great interview subject.
Right.
But one of the things that was I guess, a pleasant surprise was actually the price of the Sidefinder and the HD monitor. Apparently, both of them together are $1,500.
That's right.
Yeah. So when I looked at their website, I saw one price for one thing and one for another. I thought it was going to be like $3,000, and that would have been a little bit too expensive. But together, it's a pretty good deal, and I really like the quality of the device. And it seems like it's definitely something that I'm considering getting.
Did you get to hold it?
I did a little bit. Yeah.
It's pretty cool. Light?
Yeah. It's quite light.
Or did it just seem like nice and sturdy?
It was sturdy.
Yeah.
It was kind of metally. But
okay.
Yeah. Cool. Well, the viewfinder Sidefinder thing I think is plastic, but the frame of the other thing is metal. It was not bad.
Great.
Yeah. And it was like our first real interview, so it was we were a little nervous about it, just technically and other stuff.
Sure.
And the booth was really crowded at that point. This was at the beginning of the show, and everybody was crazy about this product. We actually had to like kick people off so that Wes could have some room to
right
to show his thing. But yeah, I think it turned out okay.
Turned out great. It turned out great. Well, let's give it another plug. You can find them at www.smallhd.com, and we're of course talking about the Small HD Sidefinder and the 502 HD on-camera monitor. And that was Wes Phillips of Small HD. And we've got a lot more interviews coming right up, so hang with us. This is Tech Move. One of the cool new products that's coming out on the market that I know Keith is very excited about is the Phantom 3. And Keith, you want to talk about the Phantom 3 real quick? What is it? What does it do? All this kind of neat stuff?
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit last episode. It's just the newest version of their Phantom, and it includes a camera, gimbal, and one of the models does 4K. And it seems like it's a really great price point, too. Yeah. It's like $1,200 or $1,300, so it's a pretty good deal. And so we just walked around. We knew that we wanted to do DJI, so I asked one of the, you know, they have tons of people at the DJI booth. So I just went up to somebody and said, so who do I talk to, somebody high up about the new DJI Phantom 3? And he says, oh, that's the guy right there. And he kind of pointed through the crowd like there were 20 people in the way, and like I could see this guy in the distance
right.
talking to somebody else. So he said, yeah, talk to him. So yeah, so we kind of like worked our way through the crowd and waited for him to complete his demo with somebody else. And usually when you have a mic in your hand and the press badge, then people, these exhibitors will start paying attention to you.
Right.
So as soon as he was done with this guy, I started talking to him, introduced myself, and we started the interview. Now this was before we got, our audio adapter situation completely locked down and solid. So you might hear a couple dropouts, where just the sound just drops out and comes back, but it wasn't really important stuff that he was saying. He was just saying something like,
everything is important that comes out of his mouth, but that's okay.
Yeah, it was just stuff, you know, bad-mouthing his competitors, and unfortunately, we missed that.
All right, so folks, just as a little precursor there, we're going to have a couple dropouts here, and that's only because Keith Moreau's MacGyvering skills weren't as quite up to par. But you know whose MacGyvering skills are up to par is Michael Perry of DJI and the Phantom 3. So here's that interview with Keith Moreau here on Tech Move.
Hi, this is Keith Moreau, Tech Move Podcast. We're here at the DJI booth here at NAB 2015. We've got Michael Perry. He is the PR manager. Why don't you talk about yourself a little bit and about your new product?
really excited to share a lot of new things with our customers at NAB 2015. Obviously, one of the most exciting things that people are really anxious to check out is the new DJI Phantom 3. And this is already starting to set the bar higher for aerial photography and aerial creation. DJI, iconic Phantom form factor, put into your backpack, but at the same time, it shoots 4K video. And then we also have this downward facing camera that allows you to have a lot more stabilization options if you're indoors or any scenario where you don't have GPS. So you're going to have a lot stronger flight performance and a lot stronger camera performance with this new platform.
That's great, Michael. So I have a question. You recently also introduced another 4K quadcopter. What's the difference between this new DJI Phantom 3 and the Inspire?
So the DJI Phantom 3 bridges our older Phantom systems with the Inspire. So obviously it's got a 4K camera on board and it's backpackable. But the Inspire 1 is designed more for people who are looking for very precise camera movements. Obviously, one of the key differentiators is that the platform transforms and allows the camera to rotate 360 degrees. That way, you can have two operators, one person controlling the platform, and the other is controlling the precise angle of the camera. Then you also have additional functions in terms of improved flight time or flight capabilities. The Inspire 1 flies a lot faster. You have a modular camera setup so that you can take the Inspire 1 camera off and use it with our handheld system that we'll be releasing later on this quarter. So there's a lot more advantages to that, but the Phantom 3 is a great option for anybody who just wants to go out and explore and see the world from a completely new perspective.
So that's great. Now, one of the things that I've been a little bit concerned about is that I'm actually a professional videographer, among other things, director. And I've always been a little wary about flying these things, you know, because of legal issues. Do you have any comments about that?
Absolutely. So particularly for professional videographers, I think they'll love this platform because we provide a lot of camera controls into the controller. So that if you're not a professional pilot, in addition to being a professional filmmaker, you're going to be able to control the gimbal, control the start, stop, record, even adjust exposure compensation and several other camera features, all from the controller. You don't have to take your hands off anymore, so you can really precisely control the camera. In terms of the legal issues surrounding being able to fly professionally, the good news is that there's starting to be a lot clearer framework put in place for how professionals such as yourself can apply for permission from the FAA in order to operate commercially. DJI, the Phantom 2 Vision Plus, was actually the first commercial-focused quadcopter to get FAA approved for professional applications, for a real estate agent, actually. But even for filmmakers or news crews, we're starting to see a lot more applications be accepted. And the process with each new application that's accepted, the process is going to get easier for everybody else who wants to apply.
That's great. Thanks so much for your time, Michael. I really appreciate it. So this is Keith Moreau for Tech Move Podcast signing off.
That's Michael Perry of DJI. And so, Keith, what were your thoughts about the Phantom 3?
I think it, from what Michael said, it was great. You know, I didn't really see it fly or anything, but it, you know, I'm sure it flies great. I guess the only thing that it really, in my opinion, doesn't have that the Inspire has is just this 360 view, but I don't know how necessary that is, you know? Yeah. So for what it does, and if the image quality is up to par, I think it's an amazing deal. And actually, Michael turned out to be a really nice guy. After the interview, we talked a little bit and we said we were going to go, because actually, I don't know if you know this, but we're going to go to Hong Kong next week and I'm going to do a little filming there. And he's actually based in Hong Kong.
Really?
Yeah, because DJI is a Chinese company.
No kidding.
Yeah. So
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So he actually lives in Hong Kong, and unfortunately he's not going to be there next week. I guess he's still on tour, but he actually recommended some great restaurants.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Like McDonald's and KFC or something like that.
Yeah, they have the only Michelin-rated McDonald's there.
Wonderful. Good.
But anyway, he turned out to be a nice guy, so I think he'd be a good interview in the future as well.
Sure. Well, frankly, anyone would be a good interview for us. Okay, let's give them a plug. DJI.com is where you will find them and the Phantom 3 and all other products there. That was Michael Perry and Keith Moreau. Keith, thanks a lot for that one. Let's get ready for our next interview right after this on Tech Move. Our next interview we have for you is it's a real pleasure to talk to this gentleman because he's been on Tech Move before, and we always enjoy having him on here, and that is Eric Kessler of Kessler Crane. And how was that to snag him in person, Keith?
It was actually great. You know, we had just talked a little bit about, are you going to be at NAB? And he said yes, and I was going to be there. I'd like to interview you. And he said yes, that would be great. But we didn't really set up a time. So after the DJI interview, we just went down to his area, and he was there. And I said, "Hey, Eric." And then he looked at my badge and recognized me, and "Hey, Keith, nice to meet you in person." So he was, you know, he turned out to be a great guy. You know, you could tell just from over the phone that he's great, but just in person, he's a really nice person. And he actually, we were starting the interview, and we were kind of troubleshooting our audio because I listened to the beginning of the DJI interview and I heard the dropouts and I was like, oh, great. And so we were just kind of concerned that, you know, we didn't want to have any more dropouts. So Veronica and I were talking about this, and Eric said, "Oh, you want some gaffer's tape?" He says, "'Cause I got some." And I said, "Okay, great. Thanks." And so he, like, you know, he's the CEO of this company and president of this company. He's like going, getting me gaffer's tape and taping up my audio cables for me. He's a really nice guy.
Well, hey, so. You know what? The king of the DIY, Eric Kessler, you know, no doubt that he would want to try and fix something that's not working right. So,
yeah.
You know, that's just absolutely perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he's a real, Veronica and I were talking about who some of our favorite people were that we interviewed, and she mentioned him. She just said he's just a really nice, genuine, good person. She could just tell that.
Great, great. Yeah. Well, let's get to that interview right now. This is Eric Kessler of Kessler Crane and Keith Moreau right here on Tech Move.
Hi, this is Keith Moreau for Tech Move Podcast. We actually have one of our favorite people on our podcast. This is Eric Kessler. He's the president of Kessler Crane. How you doing, Eric?
Doing great. Yeah, so good to meet you in person.
Great to meet you too. So today we're actually going to talk a little bit about the second shooter and all the great recent developments in the second shooter platform, and then Eric can maybe talk about some other stuff too. You never know. So here we go.
Yeah, thanks a lot. So obviously our second shooter is not a brand new thing. We came out with it, I'm going to guess to say, about 6 months ago. But a lot of changes has happened in the last 6 months. So originally it was just a 3-axis, 2-keyframe, very simple to use motion control, which it can still be that if that's all you're wanting. It can even be in a 1-axis. But what we've added recently is a lot of internal changes. We have 3-keyframe capabilities now. We have the ability to move the middle keyframe around in the time run so you can get different effects that way. We've also added some other time-lapse features in there under our advanced time-lapse control. You now can run our focus motors, and we start realizing that if we're going to let people run focus motors, they don't want to give up their pan, tilt, and slide, which you can do if you only want to use one controller. You can substitute one of your axes to run either a zoom or focus or an iris motor. But now we made the ability where you can bridge two controllers together, and when you do that, you can set up one as a master controller, and it'll run all six, up to six motors then from the one controller. So you do the same thing that you'd always do, and that is to move your camera into position that you want for your first keyframe, hit enter, second and potentially third, and then hit play for the run time, and then under your whatever run feature you want, whether it's looping in live motion or time-lapse or stop motion, you go. And also the neat thing about second shooter is we have our turntable kit, so you can take just the pan and buy the turntable kit for that, and now, you know, for guys doing product shots or commercial work, things like that, you know, you have that. So it's a very flexible modular system.
That's awesome, Eric. So I actually own the second shooter along with a few of the modules. I think I have the three axes, or I have the slider part, and I have the tilt, and I have the turntable. And I just ordered the the focus control. Can you talk a little bit about that? Maybe can you even demonstrate it? Is that possible?
Yeah, we can demonstrate it. So, I mean, if we walk over here, you can easily see that these are the focus motors. They're large geared motors made to turn either cinema lenses, or you can use photography lenses, and they will come with a strap-on lens gear that'll go around that. And, you know, it just acts like any of the other motors do. You'll have to mount it to rods. Here we're using our K-plate. And our rod kit here, and then you just mount the motors to that and roll them up into the gears on the lenses. And when you're setting up your first keyframe, you just set your focus or your zoom, you know, same way you set any other thing, just by moving the motor. And when you're happy with that, you just hit enter and you go through. So now as your subject is changing from a close to a far subject, or maybe you're not even on subject, you're just doing a landscape shot, but you want to pull focus or maybe push your zoom off into another subject, you can do that seamlessly. We all know operating sliders manually are hard enough as it is. Trying to pull focus and zoom and not have things jerking around is a very difficult thing. So that's what makes this nice. And even for interview situations, if you're on a panel board of interview and you want to pull focus from the front row to the back row, or you know, if the slider move is long enough that the dynamics are changing that you'd like to pull a little focus to keep things sharp, you now have that ability.
Oh, that's great. Well, any final words for us?
No, we just thank you for doing the interviews with us, and you know, really looking forward to the rest of the show.
Thank you very much, Eric. Really appreciate it.
Yep, it's been great.
This is Keith Moreau for Tech Move signing off. Thank you.
It's no wonder why he's a friend of Tech Move. He's he's really great, and I'm so pleased that he could make a return visit on Tech Move, which is really great. And I'm really happy that you got a chance to actually meet up and stuff.
Yeah. And he actually, before, when we were talking, he just said, so, you know, we're probably going to put that interview on our website. He says, is that okay? You know, the one we did of him, the really long one in the previous episode.
Oh, you mean he wants to put it on his website?
Yeah, he wants to put it on the Kessler Crane.
No kidding. Website. Well, look at that.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool.
That'll be great.
Yeah. So we'll have to make sure to bug him to make sure he actually does it. But,
That's right. That's right.
But yeah, so he actually talked about this focus pulling module in the interview. And actually, I ordered it a week before. So it was kind of slow shipping because it was the free version. And it got to me while I was gone.
Right.
And so I have the two cardboard boxes of the containing the Kessler stuff in upstairs.
Oh, so you haven't now. You haven't tried it out yet.
Nope.
And so in our next episode, maybe the episode after that, you'll give us a review.
Yeah, maybe I can do like an opening.
Yeah.
A box opening and put it together.
Those are always exciting. You know, those are no fun unless there's electricity involved. Those are no fun.
We can add electricity.
We can add electricity. Yeah. You soaking your feet in water with a little electricity, that'll be fun. All right. Well, that was Eric Kessler. Let me give you the ever important information. It's Kessler Crane.com, and you spell Kessler Kessler Crane.com, and that is another terrific notch we have in the old Tech Move belt. So thank you, Eric, for your time and effort on the podcast. We'll be right back with another interview right here on Tech Move. You know, when I first started getting into this digital filmmaking stuff, of course, following your lead, Keith. One of the big things that always impressed me first was the huge EVF that you had, and coming from this very company. And I am so pleased that you actually got to go visit their kiosk and actually talk to somebody there. And I believe you spoke to the one and only Steve Weiss of Zacuto.
Mm-hmm.
How was that?
It was kind of interesting because and he was just sitting around talking to people. There are actually a couple famous people in his on his couch that he was talking to at the time. One of them was actually Rodney Charters,
not Rodney Louie.
No. And he's actually a pretty famous cinematographer, and he was right there, you know. And then there in the background, this other guy, I don't know how famous he is, but he's the host of Fro Knows. Do you know that podcast?
Unfortunately, no. I'll lie and just say, yes, I do. It's a fantastic podcast.
Well, he's pretty young. I think he's in his 20s, but he's kind of crazy, and his podcast has some good information. Mostly it's him talking, and it's more of a personality thing. But he was actually had this huge rig on. He was doing this thing. And he was doing it by himself. And actually, while I was there asking Steve if I could interview him, one of his marketing people or communications people came up to him and said, "So do you know this guy? Fro knows this guy?" And I said, "Yeah, I've heard his podcast." And she started asking me what he was like. And it was kind of funny while I was talking to Steve, like her people were talking to me about, is this guy cool to be demonstrating their products? So Steve actually is a filmmaker, and he's a documentarian. He's done a lot of stuff. So he's a professional, and he wanted to make sure that it looked great. So he had these people bring over lights and light us up really well. He cleared everybody out. It was actually, I didn't really expect that level, but yeah. I think he wanted to present it in the best light. So he's a pretty funny guy, and he's pretty honest, and I like that, you know. It's a pretty honest, straightforward interview, and you know, he'd be great to have on the show at some time as well. So,
you know, and Steve Weiss, according to this bio I'm reading on the website, he is a Emmy winner too. So
yeah, I believe it. Yeah. I think I heard an interview with him a while back, and yeah, he's done a lot of stuff.
Yeah, so it's pretty neat. So let's get to that right now. From Zacuto, this is Steve Weiss and Keith Moreau from Tech Move.
Hi, this is Keith Moreau.
Dude, I'm just getting ready here, okay? All right, you're good. Are we too far apart? Okay, lighting's good?
We can reframe it.
Hold on, sir. Can you kind of clear a path here just so we can a little bit more?
You're getting this, right? Okay, good.
Keep going. There we go.
Hi, this is Keith Moreau here with Tech Move Podcast. We're really lucky to be in the Zacuto booth here with Steve Weiss of Zacuto. And we've actually rearranged everything to somehow get an amazing shot with a new EVF that Zacuto's come out. And Steve's going to talk about himself, the company, and the product. Steve?
I don't know about all that, but we'll start with the EVF. This is our Gradical EVF. It's HD. We call it Gradical HD. And it's a actual 720p OLED, micro OLED display. And there's a big difference between OLED and LCD technology. We had an LCD one. You know, an LCD, you're limited to maybe 600:1, maybe a 900:1 ratio, contrast ratio. This is a 10,000:1 contrast ratio. And when most people look in it, they're like, whoa, it's like really sharp, really bright, because we have a raffle going on right now. So the key to a device like this is, you know, people are like, well, I can get this or that or whatever. This is first and foremost a focusing device, and it is incredibly sharp. You know, there's 5.4 million pixels that you're looking at, and you got to realize that the display is about the size of that fingernail right there. So it's they're highly compacted pixels, and then the optics are key. This has a 6-lens optical system, so it's basically like a real lens. And that's important, you know. So first and foremost, focusing device. Secondly, it's kind of a DIT monitor. So it can do so many different things. I'm going to just say a couple, and we'll leave the rest to going to our website. But it has these pre-programmed buttons here, which you can program. There's 8 of them. This joystick is 4, and this is 4. And you can program them to do any of the features of the unit. But the thing that everybody's all excited about is that you can bring LUTs into here, which are lookup tables, you know, for when you're viewing a camera's log input. So when you go inside, it already has every single camera on the market, and you can select a log input that we've made for it, a preset LUT. Then you can make your own LUT. You can bring it in. You can either use it. You can tweak it in here. You can store 16 of them in here. You can tweak it and export it back out the USB jack and go into your color timing room with the proper LUT that you used. So it's really versatile in that way. Obviously, it has, you know, 2 SDIs, 2 HDMIs, it cross converts. It's got all the usual features, red line, you know, peaking, all this kind of garbage. It has a really fine diopter in here that most people are like, wow, that is, I mean, you can, it is so precise that you could play with it for a while just to get it perfect. And I'm really proud of this. So the, you know, it was a year and a half in the making. It just started shipping about a month ago, and we've got a lot of them out there so far. I think by next week we'll be caught up with our back orders. I'm going to show you something that I haven't showed anybody, so you can have a first here. This is, we're going to come out with something called the Gradical LT, which was a less resolution version of the HD. But we didn't really like it, and we wanted to stay in the sort of high end of the market, and we really like HD, and we love the look of the display and everything, that we decided to make this thing, the Gradical I, and it's tiny. Look at how small this is. So, and size and length is a huge, oh my God, I can't believe I just said that. But it is a huge, big deal when you're dealing with this, because when you build a recoil, which is our rig, you know, where it's fully short, small, and balanced, this ends up being way out in front. Well, if you've got some long thing out there, it'll be seen by the lens. So we're like, look at that little thing. It's really cute and small. But this is going to be about $1,400 when it comes out in 4 months. For a micro OLED, there's nothing like that. Same exact resolution as this. Here's the caveat. This is just a monitor, okay? It takes an SDI in. It probably will take an HDMI in when we go to market. It has a power plug on it. And all it does is look at what your camera puts out. If you put out log, you see log. If you put out an image with a LUT, you see that. But this is a super, super high-res focusing device without all the crazy features that you have in this. Some people are going to want this. Some are going to want this. This is the first time it's seen, the Gradical Eye. It's pretty cute, isn't it? Feel it. I mean, it's like, it's amazing. Yeah, I love this thing.
Well,
I don't think so. We have tons of stuff. You can come to our booth. We have all, you know, maybe 15 new products here. But, you know, our main message is, we came here with two messages. One is recoil, which is, you know, creating, that's our own concept where we have one rig that works with every single camera on the market. So you buy a new camera, it's going to fit on there. It's all a matter of where, how you position it on our plate. And Gradical, that's our message.
Well, great. Well, thank you very much, Steve. I really appreciate the interview. So this is Keith Moreau with Tech Move Podcast signing off. Thank you.
That's Steve Weiss of Zacuto. Hey, Keith, what is this Gradical Eye thing?
You know, I think it's just a scaled-down, less expensive version of their Gradical.
Okay.
The thing, it doesn't have all that computing power in it. And so probably that makes it less expensive to produce. Apparently, it's got the same level of high-quality image, but it doesn't have all the other tools like the LUTs and, you know, any other focusing aids and things like that.
A little more bare bones than mm-hmm. the Gradical.
Yeah. So yeah. I'm not sure. You know, I think it has some use, and I'm probably going to, you know, definitely try it out when it comes out. It's a good price point. It's competing with the small HD thing. The thing about the small HD thing is it actually has more computing power, and it can do a lot of that LUT stuff and other itch things. So we'll see. But it was great that Steve gave us the scoop.
Yeah. And you know what, folks? That's where you're going to hear all your breaking news is on Tech Move. That is if we record a podcast more than once a year. But anyway, hey, again, thank you very much to Steve Weiss of Zacuto. Let me give you all the fine stuff. It's Zacuto.com. You spell that Zacuto.com. Zacuto. Thanks a lot, Steve. And Keith. Let's come right back with another interview right here on Tech Move. You know, Keith, I have to admit, I'm not very familiar with the company Atomos. I know, but I am now because of this really neat product that you talked with the owner about, something that they're introducing now called the Shogun. Is that correct?
Correct. That's their newest 4K recorder.
Very nice.
Yeah. Yeah, Atomos has been around quite a while, and they're kind of like Blackmagic Design in that they have really lowered the price point on a lot of these high-end recorders. Sometimes it's just by making the things a little less expensive. And the thing that's also kind of cool about them is they usually allow third-party hard drives or SSDs to be used. It depends on the recorder. But that's actually can save you a lot of money.
Yeah, and you know, that's actually very, very, shall we say, lack of a better term, very nice of a company to allow something like that. Usually they're so locked down, they don't want anything, you know, besides their own stuff being connected or whatever.
Yeah, and I think they just have a huge advertising budget and marketing budget because their name and their logos are everywhere. Like, they're when you go into NAB, you see NAB show, but then right next to it, you see the Atomos logo, you know, which is those four different record, play, different colored buttons. You're probably familiar with that. But, yeah, and that's, if you look at their devices, they all have this kind of red, green, yellow, and blue buttons on them.
Right.
It's kind of their trademark.
Right.
I actually don't, the only Atomos device I have is called the Ninja Star, and I like it a lot. It's a really, really simple little recorder that just records an HDMI signal. ProRes, and so far I like it a lot. One of the other things that I was thinking about possibly getting, which a lot of people are getting to really record 4K on their from their DSLRs, is the Shogun. So it can take an HDMI signal in and actually record 4K. So this is their new flagship product. It's got a pretty nice monitor as well. And so yeah, just like in a lot of these cases, I just ask one of the people, who do I talk to? Who do I get an interview with? I just asked some random person on the edge of the booth that had a Atomos shirt on. And he said, that guy. So I make a beeline to that guy, who happened to be Jeremy Young, the owner. And he just said, do you want to do it? I said to him, can I interview? He said, yeah, let's do it. And so we just did it right there within seconds.
Excellent.
And it was in pandemonium. There were like games going on. There were people crowding in. It was just crazy. But we got it.
That's great. All right. Well, let's listen to this. This is Jeremy Young of Atomos, along with Keith Moreau of TechMove.
This is Keith Moreau with TechMove Podcast. We're here with Jeremy Young, the CEO and founder of Atomos. How are you doing today, Jeremy?
Yeah, very good. Very good. Big day for us. I love NAB. We're an Australian company. We've got lots of offices here, so a big American presence, but love coming here. It's like Christmas for us.
So we have a new product today we want to talk about. Why don't you tell us about it, Jeremy?
Yeah, so we've got our Shogun, which is a 4K recorder, and it's just been added a lot of features to it. So we've got anamorphic squeeze, it records both ProRes, Avid DNX, and will soon record Cinema DNG, so for raw recording from cameras. And we've got a very complete and deep operating system that does almost everything that a studio does, but in one little device. And it sits on top of cameras and records directly from the sensor of the camera or from any video feed from your iPad or from a phone. So it's a pretty cool little device.
So just walking around the show, you can't really help but know that Atomos is a force?
Yes. Yes, we are a force. Yes, we are a force. And the reason we're a force is because we give really easy to use. We combine products together. We've combined a recorder, a monitor, a playback deck, and an editing device all in one, plus now a 3D LUT box. So we do everything that we can in the software to make it. And this is all our own operating system. We wrote everything from scratch. It's all our architecture. There's no building blocks from someone else. We don't take a HDMI interface from someone and buy it and put it in. We write it ourselves. And those things are really important to get customers actually good quality. And then we're open on the things you need to be open on, like any camera. Work with any camera. Work with any hard disk that's capable. We test that heavily, and then we give you a list of hard disks, and you buy the cheapest one that you can find inside your area or online. So these are the things that we really believe in, and I think it's testament to that philosophy, the success that we've had.
So what are some of the things that you think are special about this new product here, the Shogun?
Well, actually, it's enabling the amazing 4K cameras from Japanese makers. I lived and worked in Japan for a very long time, and I'm always in awe of the technology that they deliver, but they don't package up the product exactly as we would like sometimes. So my job is to connect the camera world to the post-production world and make it easier and more affordable for people to do things with the camera that they know and trust, a Canon or a Nikon or a Sony. The reason they love those or Panasonic. The reason they love those cameras is because they've been workhorses for them, reliable. And now they're getting more affordable. 4K is here, and we can give you 4K ProRes, DNX, edit-friendly formats for a fraction of the price of what used to be 4K 5 years ago. You can buy a $2,000 camera and a 16.95 Shogun, and for under $4,000, you are recording as good, if not better quality, than Hollywood production.
Well, that's great. Thank you very much, Jeremy. I really appreciate your time.
Okay, cheers.
Thank you very much. This is Keith Moreau signing off for TechMove.
That was Keith Moreau, and along with Jeremy Young of Atomos. I don't know how you pronounce it. I keep seeing it in different dialects, it seems like. Atomos, Atomos, Adams. But it is spelled ATOMOS.com is where you will find Jeremy and the entire company, where they, of course, are featuring their Shogun product right now. Keith, any last words on that one?
Yeah, it was just crazy. There was so much, there's pandemonium going on around this interview. Behind him, there was this semi-nude painted woman doing some kind of lottery with lots of noisy things going on, and then people were cheering. We were squeezed in. People were almost tripping over our makeshift little DIY audio cable going from me to Veronica's iPad. So yeah, it was crazy. I'm really glad we got it though.
I am too. It was really great. Thank you, Jeremy, and thank you, Keith. We'll have more interviews right here on TechMove. Continuing our coverage of NAB 2015 with Keith Moreau, I am Rod Louie. And our next interview is a very special one. Blackmagic. Keith stumbled upon this one, and we got a great, great person to talk about the Blackmagic products, Tina Ekman. Keith, how did that whole thing come about?
Yeah, the Blackmagic booth was pandemonium. It was so crowded, and it was huge. I mean, the booth, the area, it's not really a booth, the area was huge. They had all kinds of products all over the place. They had things up in the air. They had things on the ground. It was packed. They had a little theater where they were showing stuff and talking stuff, kind of an open-air theater. Around the back of their booth was their marketing interview area. So I asked somebody where to go for that. They directed us to the back. I talked to a person that was kind of managing it in the back, and she said, yeah, we're just totally booked. We don't have any space for you. And I said, really? And this was at about 5 or so, 5 p.m., maybe 4:45 p.m. on Monday. But they were pretty nice about it. And I just, can you fit us in now? Cause we're ready to go now. But I want to talk to somebody, you know, about this, Ursa Mini. And so she said, let me check. So she talked to about 3 or 4 people. Finally, she said, okay, we can fit you in at 5:30 PM. Come back and we'll do it. Mm-hmm. So that was great. So we kind of went off and took a break and came back in about 20 minutes and sat down, kind of tested our rig again to make sure it was it would record. Right. And then we actually wound up having a couple people to talk to, and it was decided that Tina would talk to us, and there was not an Ursa Mini in the back. Normally they do all the interviews in the back, but they had grabbed the Ursa Mini for some other event that they were going to do. So there were that product was not there. So they said, do you need to show the product? And I said, yeah, we're talking about this product. We have to show it.
Right.
So they said, okay. And they were very helpful. So we actually all went out in this entourage, like 2 marketing people and me and Veronica out into the crowd.
And you know what's awesome? You're just holding this iPad with the mic connected to it.
Yes.
And they're treating you like National Geographic or something like that, which is great.
I know, with this like little taped up connector with some extra connectors sticking out.
That's what TechMove means to this arena here. That's what TechMove means.
Yep. Yeah. So we went out and kind of pushed our way through the crowd, and we had one of the marketing people was like guarding our space so that nobody would walk through it and trip over the cable. And and Tino's great. It was kind of funny because I just, it was kind of a little bit overwhelming. And because this product, I didn't really do that much research in it. In fact, I just found out about it like an hour before that this Ursa Mini was available.
She must have been so complimented by that.
So I pretty much gave her the mic, and then she started talking and talking to the camera and stuff, and it actually was pretty good. But then after a while, I said, well, this isn't going to work. And I said, I'm going to take the mic back because I need to talk. I need to ask you questions. And so that was kind of funny. But she was great, and I asked a lot of stuff, and she was pretty informative.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah. let's listen to it, because I thought she really did a really great job. And
yeah,
she is definitely well thought out in her delivery and stuff like that. She's a professional. Let's get to it. This is Tina Ekman of Black Magic, along with Keith Moreau of Tech Move.
Tina Ekman.
Yes.
And you're the Los Angeles?
Just say I'm based in LA as well.
Okay.
So we're recording? Okay. Hi, this is Keith Moreau with Tech Move Podcast, and we have here Tina Ekman, based in Los Angeles for Black Magic Design. I'm going to have Tina just talk incessantly about all these products.
Great. Do you want me to hold this? Okay, great. So I'll just take over now for you, Keith. Thank you so much for stopping by. Welcome to Black Magic at NAB 2015. We have a slew of cameras to talk about today, and we're standing actually in front of the one that's getting a whole lot of buzz, which is the Ursa Mini. So you might know the Major Ursa that we have from last year, the original. This one is actually a smaller design, so if you want to take a weight, just a look at the weight rather, 5.5 pounds with no accessories on it. But the same shutter or the same sensors. So we've announced two sensors. Obviously, we have the 4.0 sensor. We now have an amazing 4.6 with 15 stops of dynamic range, which is just incredible. So in addition to that, we can do 60 frames with a rolling shutter or 30 with a global shutter. Ursa, the original, can actually do 120 frames now rolling and 60 global, which means you are getting stellar images out of both these cameras. So depending on what size you need, if you're doing more of a run-and-gun style, then perhaps the Ursa Mini is the right one for you. And with that said, we've actually added an accessory pack on this as well. So you can see there's a quick-release shoulder, as well as a handle, and then an extension rod, oh, not on this one, that you can actually take the record handle and put at the end for that perfect balance. We've also added the electronic viewfinder, which works on both Ursas, and this is a beautiful precision glass design with an OLED display, 1920 by 1080. You can set the focus really easily, adjust it for your eye first, and that way you know that the focus is actually completely precise when you're going to do your shoot. In addition, there's a record light on the front, $1,495, $395 for the accessory pack. Ursa Mini is starting at $2,995 for the EF 4.0, and then it goes up incrementally for PL and or the next sensor, which is the 4.6. It's about $2,000 more for the 4.6 sensor. Same with the original Ursa.
Okay. I'm going to take the mic back.
That was great. You held it very well. So I'm going to ask a few specific questions.
Sure.
So there's the Mini,
yes.
And we were talking about the Mini. And then there's the Micro.
So the micro is actually a different product sensor. So if you think about the pocket camera, we now have the Micro Cinema camera, which is actually the same sensor as the pocket. But in addition to that, if you look at it, it's about the size of a tennis ball. So it's really the Micro Four Thirds mount for the lens, same Super 16 sensor, 13 stops of dynamic range, a battery on the back. It's got HDMI out. There's no monitor on this little tiny camera, but if you look around our booth, you'll see that there's drones above our head, and they're mounted there. Record light in the front, so if you're mounting this camera in a car or a tight space, you can still hit record from the front. It records to an SDI, or SD card rather, and it's ProRes and DNX. That same form factor can be completely hacked with the expansion port that's on the side, which allows you to do things remotely, remote control. On our website, there's about 80 functions. It gives you a whole lot more detail than I can give you right now.
Okay, so this is a competitor made for a GoPro, but just higher end?
You know, actually, so we build products based on what our customers ask for. We're not necessarily trying to compete with anybody because it actually is a really powerful cinematic lens sensor. I just spoke to someone that was using their Pocket for a feature, and this is another option for those people making amazing images. Price is $1,000 for this camera. We have that same form factor in a live version, the Micro Studio camera as well. $1,295 for that one. Doesn't record, but it works directly with our switchers the way the studio camera does. So lots of options.
So that's available here somewhere. We can see that.
Little tiny ones, actually. So there's a micro above my head right there. But actually, if you look, there's another micro camera right over there above the red light. So that's the Micro Studio camera. And then the cinema camera is definitely floating around here. Last thing is the video assist, which you should know about, because both of those cameras have no way of looking at the content unless you go HDMI out into a computer or HDMI out into our new video assist, which is a 5-inch 1920 1080 high def screen that allows you as a touch screen to set up the menus, look at your image, make any adjustments you need to do on the camera, and then you can put it in its final location and hit the record button.
Wow, this is amazing. Okay, so let's step back and let's look a little bit more at this. So tell me, what's the least expensive version of this and the most expensive version?
Okay, the least expensive version is the EF 4.0, $2,995. The high-end model would be the PL 4.6, and I believe it's $6,495. Let's double check, because I usually do math to get there. But that sounds about right for this camera as well. And it actually, $5,495 for the EF 4.6 15 stops PL mount.
So by
3 and 5,500.
Okay, so when you say 4.6, what does that mean?
That's the 4.6 sensor. So you're actually getting 4,600 pixels by whatever that is. And then in addition, the 15 stops. So you're gaining not only frame size beyond the traditional 4096 resolution that allows you to pan and zoom in, whatever, but you're also gaining 3 times additional color depth compared to the 12 stops, which is just allowing you to really punch into the darks or really, you know, work with the brights within that range.
So will a EF full frame lens work with this, or EFS lens?
EF in general. So depending on, I mean, anytime you use a new lens, you want to double check and make sure things are working the way you expect them to. But the EF lens mount will support most EF lenses as expected. The same with PL, actually.
Is there, I guess I was asking about the actual physical size of the sensor. So if you put a full frame lens on it, will it?
Yeah, so when we say it's an EF mount, it's set up for those EF lenses. So you're going to get all the resolution data. You're not going to get dark edges or anything. The time that you're going to see that happen is when you use a ring adapter to go back and forth. So if we were selling you an EF and you had used a ring adapter, then you definitely want to be conscious to make sure the sensor was filling. But the way the sensors are working, we should be good with both of those mounts.
Well, that's great. Well, you've been very, very helpful. I really appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you so much. Have a good day.
Well, this is Keith Moreau for Tech Move Podcast signing off.
You know, I should properly refer to the company as Blackmagic Design. They are located at www.blackmagicdesign.com. Keith, what are your thoughts about the Ursa and the Ursa Mini?
Well, when I saw it, I said, wow, that's really what they needed to do.
What, the Mini? Really
they needed to come out with a 4K smaller version. And then when they said it had the 15 stops of dynamic range, that sounded great.
I thought I did see in the interview your eyes light up a little bit. I thought you were gazing at it, at the thought of that.
Yeah. And at the price point, I mean, it's unbeatable price point. So those are the positive things. The negative, there's a couple negatives. It doesn't have internal NDs. You're going to have to always, add some type of thing to the front if you want to have shallowed up the field, probably almost all the time. Although maybe you don't have to do that as much because it's probably not that sensitive, a camera. You kind of know when something's not that sensitive when they don't mention it. Like Canon mentions can go up to ISO 157,000.
Yeah, right.
And Blackmagic just says 15 stops of dynamic range, but they don't mention the native ISO. So jury's out on that, because it's going to be really hard for me to work with a camera that's not that sensitive. it's just going to be somewhat limiting. So, and then the fact that it doesn't have the built-in internal NDs is also a little bit limiting, because then you always have to add this extra thing on the front, you know, this extra step. But we'll see. You know, we'll see. I think it's a much smaller design. It's a little bit lighter than the Ursa. It's 4K, and it's actually 4.6K. And that and then the 15 stops of dynamic, that might actually overcome some of the little negatives. So we'll see. And then, so after the interview was official, sometimes I talk to these people after the interview is over, because they're kind of more relaxed now. They've done their spiel.
Yeah.
And then I get to talk to them about real stuff. and I said, so when's it going to come out? And they said, well, it's going to come out in June. And I said, yeah, but when is it really going to come out? Because, as you know, Blackmagic Design doesn't usually meet their announced dates.
Right.
They're usually, I mean, they might ship like one unit out. You know, like the one lucky customer number one gets it, but then all the normal people have to wait months for it. So, or possibly years.
Right.
But they said, no, it's probably going to come out then. So, but they kind of both looked at each other when I said that. You know,
like, don't say that.
So we'll see. But when it comes out, it'd be great to see some of the images and some of the tests and see how it does. It's up there. It's a competitor to the FS7, I think, now at this point. Yeah.
Cool. So, excellent. Yeah. Excellent. Well, Keith, thanks a lot. That's Tina Ekman of Blackmagic Designs. And we will come right back with more on Tech Move. Our next interview we'd like to share with you was done especially for me, Rod Louie. And I know, Keith, you had me in mind for this one. We're talking about, of course, Panasonic and the GH4. You spoke to a gentleman there by the name of Matt Fraser. And Keith, thank you very much for doing this for me.
You're welcome. You're welcome, Rodney.
I mean, it was so great to have some Micro Four Thirds representation here on this podcast. Even though I still do not have a GH4, I love anything Panasonic. So, Keith, how did you get into this one? And I'll tell you, the rig, the GH4 rig that was behind you guys was extremely impressive to me. I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. It actually had the convergent design 7Q plus, the one that I have mounted on top of it. That was what they were using to monitor it.
Yeah.
And record. So, and apparently they really like that combination. So, that's what he told me, at least during the interview.
Yeah.
And afterwards. But getting to this interview was another toughie, because it was a huge, very extremely crowded booth. And Panasonic, it seemed like the GH4 stuff wasn't like it wasn't all over the place. It was in one very specific area.
You mean like it wasn't all over their booth or anything like that?
No, it seemed like it was kind of confined to one area, and they had all the other Varicams and the other, you know, really high end Panasonic stuff all over the place. You know, the GH4 is kind of more the hobbyist semi pro level.
Correct.
And yeah, but it has a lot of interest. And I really like this guy, Matt. He's what I liked about him. He wasn't just this marketing guy that had all the marketing speak. Like, he really knew the technical stuff, and he had opinions too.
Yeah.
And he didn't necessarily say all the opinions during the interview. He had a couple opinions afterwards, but I really liked his honesty, and he had a lot of great technical info.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and it's, you know, we represent the Panasonic, the GH series. That's what Tech Move does. So
we represent.
And without further ado, let's get right to it. Matt Fraser of Panasonic and Keith Moreau of Tech Move.
Hi, this is Keith Moreau here with Tech Move. We're here at the Panasonic booth, and we're going to talk about the GH4.
Hi, Keith. So we've announced a new firmware update for the GH4. It's going to be version 2.2. There's two things it adds. One of them is a silent 16,000th of a second shutter for photographers. The other thing that it adds is an anamorphic function for anamorphic cinematic production. For those of the people out there who are confused by what anamorphic means, what it means is we have these lenses that will squeeze a subject as it's coming into the optic. It squeezes it twice as tall and skinny as real life is. When we do that, we want to squeeze it onto a unique sized sensor. You don't want to do that on a 16:9 aspect ratio, because then when you go to stretch it back out in post-production, what you get is a very long aspect ratio that doesn't work real well with televisions or cinematic work. The industry standard is to shoot this on a 4:3 aspect ratio sensor. So that's what we've done, is we've effectively added a 4:3 mode that records a higher capture, a taller capture than the 16:9 window. It records at 3328 wide, but by 2496 tall. So you're actually getting a slightly larger crop of the Micro Four Thirds sensor than you're getting in the 16:9 mode. This helps to give you a slightly shallower depth of field, but it also facilitates this beautiful anamorphic look where we use these lenses and get this just amazing look out of the final production.
That's great. So I actually have a GH4, and I've been tweaking a little bit with the picture profiles, and I'm not sure if it's available yet, but do you have any plans for some type of log type profile?
Yeah, we're actually demonstrating in the booth our V-Log L function, which we still haven't announced a date of release, but we are demonstrating it. We are working on it. Don't worry, we're going to get you some sort of a log profile. I'm 99% sure it's going to happen. This show just wasn't going to provide us with the opportunity to announce it, because there's still some up-in-the-air things about how we plan to implement V-Log.
Got it. So maybe in the next month or two, you'll introduce something?
Well, it's hard to say when. Keep in mind that the firmware 2.2 that we're talking about now, that's going to be available at the end of April. So we try to announce things within very close proximity to when we're actually going to offer the update. It's not common for Panasonic to make you wait 6 months for an update. I don't know how long it's going to take for the engineers to 100% finalize how V-Log is going to get into the camera for the customer, or if there's some sort of a tweak that has to be made to the hardware to make it work. We just don't know those particulars yet. So until we know those things, we don't want to just announce something and then have people be frustrated because it takes us longer than we initially announced.
Okay, that makes sense. I actually have an Odyssey 7Q Plus. Do you want to? I see that. Do you want to talk a little bit about the interface between the two?
Okay, so the reason we're using the Odyssey 7Q Plus on the GH4 for this demo is that we're showing the anamorphic lens here. Both Convergent Designs and Atomos have announced an intention to put in a de-squeeze mode for anamorphic. So you'll be able to see your content properly stretched as you're filming it. Very useful tool. The reason I chose to use the Convergent Designs piece right now is that their output will also output the de-squeezed information to a monitor. So in, you know, intensity, if I'm trying to show client what the final production is going to look like, I can output it with the LUTs applied. I can output it properly de-squeezed. It just makes it easier. And frankly, for this venue, asking 30 people to surround themselves around this beautiful but admittedly small monitor versus this, you know, very large monitor, it's just not conducive to this environment. So the 7Q was a perfect opportunity. 7Q Plus was perfect for us for this. Now, this is running very preliminary firmware, so it's not exactly ready for prime time for the rest of the world. But I've talked to the folks there, and they seem very confident that they're going to launch this firmware by the end of the month as well.
That's great. Well, thank you very much for your assistance here and your information. It's been great.
Hey, thanks, Keith. I really appreciate you guys taking the time to come to our booth.
Keith Merrill here with TechMove, signing off.
I feel renewed. I feel like a new man after hearing that. I mean, it's so promising. But what in the world is V-Log?
I guess V-Log is Panasonic's version of C-Log or S-Log. C-log would be
Is there a Q-log or a G-log?
There might be a G-log. That sounds familiar. but yeah, it's a log format that gives you potentially more dynamic range by spreading out the amount of bits that are recorded in the high end and the low end. Unfortunately, it's not always the best thing to record on. It depends on the camera, and it also depends on the codec that you're recording on. So if you're recording on an 8-bit codec, V-Log isn't necessarily the best thing to use, because then you get a lot of you get a lot of detail maybe in the highs and the lows, but you don't necessarily get a lot of detail in the mids, which is kind of what you need for skin tones.
Yeah.
Because that's in the mids, so you might get some banding. And so it's not always necessarily the best thing. But the thing is that everybody wants V-Log for, because like Panasonic in the GH4 is the only company that doesn't have it, some kind of log. So everybody wants it. And so Matt talked a lot about that and also talked about some of the advantages and disadvantages of it. And later I also talked to him about the fact that I'm not even using Cine profile anymore on my GH4. I'm just going to portrait and some other. I read some threads about why the Cine profiles aren't the best, and I'm starting to convert over to the non-Cine.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Yep. So, yeah, but I liked his honesty, and, you know, it was actually a surprisingly nice interview. Again, really tough. We had very little space because it was in a small space, but it was kind of in a corridor.
Yeah.
So I didn't want people walking through the middle of us. So I had Veronica get pretty close to us so that people could walk behind her if they needed to. So it was technically a challenging interview.
Well, but you know what? It sounded great, as all of these do. So
thank you.
Yeah, so good work. That's Matt Frazier of Panasonic, and our own Keith Moreau of TechMove. So let's come back, and we'll have another one for you right here on TechMove. Okay, folks, we want to talk about something that Keith saw. It's not necessarily an interview. But it is posted on our Twitter page, and our Twitter page again is twitter.com/techmovepodcast, or if you're a Twitter person, @techmovepodcast, you'll find us there. But this is a demo about, I guess, lack of a better term, drones that do heavy lifting of equipment.
Right, like for bigger cameras, like for non-GoPros.
Okay, so on our Twitter page, we've posted a 30-second video, of which I'm going to play right now as Keith kind of talks about it, and I'll kind of talk about it because I haven't really seen this thing, so I'm going to watch it while Keith talks about it right now, okay. and then I'll give you a play-by-play afterwards about what I see.
Okay, so I got there. It was kind of late in the day. We actually had to go to the airport right after this, so we walked to the South Hall, which is where the drone pavilion was, and there's hundreds of people there seated, and then lots of people gathered around them as well. There's some official person, probably a company executive, talking about how great this stuff is, and then these two guys that are trying to get this drone to lift off the ground.
And here's my play-by-play. It doesn't go hardly anywhere. It does seem... here's the play-by-play. I'm watching it again. The drone has liftoff, and we're talking about maybe right at this point, roughly 4 to 5 feet off the ground. It starts to stutter. It descends to about the 3-foot level, and then it just stops because it's just too tired. Now, I will also tell you that the video, the audio on the video that you captured, sounds like it's trying to be a flying lawnmower, because the sound of this thing, you need to wear ear protectors if you're using. Was it that loud in this pavilion, Keith? Was it that loud?
It was pretty loud, and I actually was kind of close. All the seats, by the time I got there, every single seat was taken, but there was a huge middle aisle, and I just went into the middle aisle and sat down right in the middle. So I was about 20 feet away.
So you sat on the floor, essentially.
Yeah, I sat on the floor and I just had my little iPhone up because I just wanted to get something to put up on Twitter and talk about. And the amount of wind coming off this thing was amazing.
I mean, like, it's a nice looking unit. It's huge, though. I mean, like, it looks like it stands about 3 feet tall.
Yeah, it's a big one. And it's big. Yeah, and it's for big, high-end camcorders.
Yeah, well, yeah. I maybe not that high end, because it's not going to go anywhere.
You know, it was really, so there was obviously some technical issue with it, which is really embarrassing.
Yeah,
because you have all these hundreds of people and they can't even like get it 5 feet off the ground, and so I'm sure somebody got chewed out after this. But
which is always unfortunate, right?
Yeah,
it's not those poor guys, you know, the operator's fault or anything like that. Just, you know, whatever it is.
Or it might be, but
it could be.
But you know, you figure there's all these technicians around, all these resources from the company. You figure they could get this demo to work. It's not a very good ad. But the thing that was really funny is that at the end, He says, and if you want to watch the camera's point of view, you can watch it over at this other booth.
Which is really no different than you standing on your tiptoes and falling right back down on the floor again.
Pretty much.
Yeah, that's great. Well, we encourage you to go on our Twitter page, at TechMovePodcast. Take a look at this thing. It's called the Heavy Lifter Demo. And obviously didn't really work all that well. So that's unfortunate. Well, hey, Keith, great reporting.
Thank you.
That's what news is based upon, is all the tragedies in life, and this is one of them.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's Keith Moreau reporting and on assignment live at NAB 2015. We'll be right back with more Tech Move. Keith, one of your favorite tools from the very start of filmmaking to you know, where we're at today and all the stuff we're talking about today is the fluid head.
Mm-hmm.
And you actually got to meet a person who has designed one. And we're talking specifically about a company called Really Right Stuff. And we were lucky enough to talk to a gentleman there by the name of Verint Chan, who is actually a designer with Really Right Stuff. And what was your thoughts on the fluid head that they were talking about?
Well, when I was walking through the kind of pre-walkthrough to see who I might want to interview, I saw Really Right Stuff. They don't have a huge booth, but they're, you know, fairly large. But I really like this fluid head that I bought from them. And it's not cheap. It's like $2,000.
Whoa!
Yeah, but their stuff is not cheap. But for what it does, it compares to heads that are much more expensive, like $5,000 heads or $6,000. It's really a really nice head. And it's designed for smaller cameras. But I actually use it on everything. It holds everything. And the thing that's, and Verint will actually show you in the video how stable it is. You know, like you just can't get a regular tripod head to do what this thing does because of the technology in there. So, yeah, so since I own one, I bought one, you know, when it first came out like 6 months ago, I just wanted to talk to the person that designed it.
Yeah, and you did, and we were lucky enough to get him. Let's get to that interview right now. This is, again, Verint Chan of Really Right Stuff, along with Keith Moreau on Tech Move.
Hi, this is Keith Moreau here of Tech Move, and we're here at the Really Right Stuff booth, and we're actually going to talk about a fluid head that I actually own and I love. Why don't you introduce yourself?
My name is Verint Chan. I'm the principal engineer here at Really Right Stuff.
Why don't you talk about this head?
Great. This is our Really Right Stuff FH350 fluid head. It has an entirely CNC machined aluminum body. There's no cast metal components in here. It's designed for DSLRs and lightweight setups such as this Blackmagic here. And what we really like about it is we've taken a lot of cues from the high-end fluid heads and basically brought that technology down to a lower price point and for cameras that are much smaller in size.
I actually have this head and I actually use it for everything, including some of the larger cameras, and it still works really well for me.
Well, that's great. Yeah. One of the big features that that we've incorporated is a truly sinusoidal counterbalance mechanism, which enables you to have virtually no kickback from your spring counterbalance system. As demonstrated here, when the head is properly balanced, I can move it down to practically any position and let go, and this is with no damping applied. It's a very weightless feel to the camera, and something you only find in heads that cost five times this. So,
that's great. Well, thank you very much for your help here. You make excellent stuff. By the way, did you design this?
I was the principal designer on this project, yes.
So how long did it take for you to conceive of it and actually get it through the whole process? Like, well, how long did each stage take you?
Well, we went through a number of prototypes, and the whole process ended up taking about 3.5 years from concept to launch and actually selling the first fluid head.
And so how is this head doing for your company?
Oh, it's been great. It's very well received. Last year, it was one of our top sellers for 2014.
That's great. Well, you did an excellent job. I really love it.
Thank you very much.
Well, we're signing off here. This is Keith Moreau from TechMove here at the Really Right Stuff booth, NAB 2015.
You know, Keith, I was watching the video, and the head can do so many different things. The ergonomics of it, the performance of it, really look fantastic. What are your thoughts on? You own one, so what do you think?
I own one, and just balancing it is super easy. And then once you balance it, the camera just stays where you put it. And you can vary the amount of drag really easily, and the amount of tilt drag and the amount of pan drag. And it's just nice to have something, just a really nicely well-made thing. Because you're kind of, when you're on a tripod and you're using a head like this, it kind of becomes an extension of your body. So it's kind of like driving a really fine car or really highly tuned whatever. It's just, it's nice when you have such a high quality thing that's an extension of your body.
That's nice. That it really looks great, really looks well made. I'd love to see one in person. So I'll come over your place and take a look at yours.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
We can balance your GH1 on it.
Exactly. Okay, here's the specifics. ReallyRightStuff.com, all one word. That's Variant Chan. We want to thank Variant for joining us. Keith, thanks a lot. We'll get to more on Tech Move. Keith, I've got a nice little surprise for you. I've got one of your more in-depth interviews that it's about to come up right now. And it's going to be featuring a gentleman by the name of Mitch Gross of Convergent Design. This is a fairly in-depth interview. And can you talk about it briefly here before we get to it?
Yeah, I actually saw Mitch talking. He was actually, I think, the very first guest on the Geek Beat TV thing. That, you know, where we were like lounging around and using their charging stations and
yep.
not listening to what... their show,
right.
But just using them. But yeah, he was actually the first guest, and so I knew he was here. But what was weird was when I was searching the NAB show app, they actually have an app, you know, that you can download and use on your iPhone, which is really cool because you can find the exhibitors and locate them and then mark your favorites and things. It was actually very useful. I looked up Convergent Design, and it wasn't there, like, the first day. Actually, in the pre-show time when I was there, I couldn't find them. But then on the first day, I did see them, and I said, oh, and then I looked it up again, and they must have added it to the NAB show app. Maybe they were a late entry or something. But so I thought, well, it would be great to actually go up there and talk to this guy because I've seen him so many times. I've read endless posts. He's one of the few representatives of a major... cinematography gear company that actually posts directly to forums. It's actually great.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You don't get that very often,
no,
do you?
No, and it's always usually the company line. It's always just very, very brief information, nothing controversial or anything. He's actually just out there. And there was a time when Convergent Design was promising all this stuff and they weren't delivering, and all the customers were getting really mad at them and writing in the forum, and he was kind of defending himself but also saying sorry. It was actually kind of cool in a way. You just right. never see this with a manufacturer. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, so I felt like it would be kind of cool to talk to him in person. And also, since I personally have two Odyssey 7Qs, I have the original 7Q, and then I have the new 7Q Plus that does the HDMI 4K recording. That's
right.
That's the main difference. Other than that, they're just exactly the same. I thought, yeah, I get some more information for myself personally. So he seemed to sense that I really wanted to hear more, so he just kept talking, and it was great.
That's fantastic. That's great. Well, let's get to it right now. Here is Keith Moreau along with Mitch Gross of Convergent Design right here on Tech Move.
Hi, this is Keith Moreau with Tech Move. We're here at the Convergent Design booth with Mitch Gross, and we're going to talk about the Odyssey 7Q Plus.
Hey there. So we had 7 different announcements. Originally it was 6 new announcements, but then we added a 7th announcement for all these new, great, wonderful things that we're doing with the Odyssey 7Q Plus. The biggest part of all these announcements is that none of them were new hardware. Everything is for the current. We don't obsolete things, so we really try not to. So it's everything was for Kern hardware. And all these announcements, all seven of them, they pertained equally to the 7Q Plus as well as the previous model, the 7Q. And most of these announcements were for completely free upgrades. Some of them were things that, you know, you'd spend some money on. Others were actually lowering your costs. So we're really happy about the fact that, you know, we're here for our client base. We're not just like trying to sell new stuff all the time and get new things in new directions and totally destroying someone's business model for, you know, they buy something, they have to throw it away and get a new thing. We're not about that. We want to keep the relationship going. And really, we designed the product so that it will grow with you over time.
That's great. You want to talk about the new announcements?
So, first new announcement is in our ProRes recording. We are able, in a camera such as the FS7 and FS700, we've been able to record 4K at 60 frames a second and 2K at 240 frames a second in RAW. We are now going to do, well, very soon in the next month or two, we will be doing those same frame rates in Apple ProRes. So on those cameras, we'll take a RAW signal, 4K at 60, 2K at 240 frames a second, take it into the Odyssey, process it, debayer it, turn it into video, and then record it in Apple ProRes. And Apple ProRes 422 HQ, Apple ProRes regular 422, or 422 LT. So that's even the Amira from Arri, that's the highest frame rate ProRes up till now. That's 200 frames. Here we're doing 240 frames. And then we're going to propagate that out over the next few months to cameras like the C500 and for the F55 that has a 4K video output, so that can go up to 60 frames. So we'll be able to take that directly in and do it 4K ProRes up to 60 frames a second. It's very, very powerful, very useful. And 60 frames a second in 4K is really important because there's different like major networks and different distributors and such that's going to become a deliverable requirement. In the next year or so, you're going to have to do 4K 60 to be able to be in business and to sell someone your product, your material. So here we are, we're delivering that to you now. You're going to be able to do that, and not just in RAW with heavy burden of all that data. So that was the first big one. I got to remember all seven of them. We are going to support the AJA Scion camera. We're going to be able to record RAW from it, be able to take that and turn into ProRes as well. We also can do the IO Industries Flare 4K, a tiny little camera that's a 4K sensor, Super 35 size sensor. It's a little box, and we'll be able to do that one as well, and similar kind of frame rates and resolutions and such. Also, the new Canon C300 Mark II that was just announced. We already fully support that camera. So the RAW outputs from that camera are the same as the RAW outputs from the C500. So 4K or Ultra HD up to 60 frames a second, a 4K half res up to 120 frames a second. We already support that. And so we will support it on the new camera. We also can take the HD signal, and that can go up to 120 frames a second. So we'll be able to do that as well. Record that right in Apple ProRes without having to convert anything. That camera, its internal recording in 4K is limited to 4K at 30 frames a second. It has this new codec they developed, and they can do that. Of course, we can take the 4K, and it can output over RAW 60 frames, and so we can take that recorded in RAW, or we can turn into 4K 60 frames a second ProRes. So here you have the same camera, but we can now give you that really high-quality video output recording from it that's more capability than the manufacturer's even able to do internally in the camera themselves. So we're just keep trying to expand the functionality of these devices. Something we're going to have available for free in just a few weeks, by the end of April, is 3D LUT implementation. Now we get a whole slew, it's the next firmware release, it's a whole slew of all these different monitoring functions. We're going to have anamorphic D squeeze and 17:9 frame viewing, so it letterboxes it in. We've improved our waveform and zebras and false color, all these different things we did all these improvements on. But we've brought in this huge new functionality with 3D LUTs. In the past, The 3D LUTs have just been a few that we had built in. You just turn them on, turn it off kind of thing. Now you can create your own custom 3D LUTs. And you do it in like Resolve, which is a free program, you know, and there's other places that you can do it too. It's Image Cube, which is a standard, most common format for doing 3D LUTs. And there, we take all the color resolutions of 3D LUTs. So there's a 9x9x9 and a 17x17 and a 33x33 or 65. We take them all. We do all the different formats. We turn it into a binary file structure, which is really important because if someone has like sort of their own secret sauce of a LUT and they, you know, this is my special look, nobody can like copy it from them and steal it from them. You can give it to somebody else if you want, but if you want to protect it, it's protected in your machine. You can store more than 200 of them in the Odyssey, and we have a whole like sort of directory and a folder system and files, so you can structure it to, you won't lose track of the thing, but you can keep it in there, and you can always take it out if you don't want to have it kept in there, but you can name them for like, this is for a certain project and stuff like that. You keep it all tracked in there, and that's just great, just getting it in, because you've created it in Resolve, so whatever you see on your monitor, you apply that in your final in Resolve when you're doing your whatever post work, and it's going to look identical. It is the exact same thing. So that's, you know, you're confident that you know what you're getting. But even better than that is the way that we implement the LUTs actually in the Odyssey 7, 7Q and 7Q Plus. Other systems are just sort of taking a LUT and just throws it on top of everything. That's it. You got it in there. We don't do that. We allow you to choose exactly where and how you would ever apply the LUT. And it's a whole routing system. There's the OLED screen. And so you can say, well, turn on the LUT so on the OLED screen so I can see what that looks like. Or you have the SDI-1 output to another monitor. Or you have the SDI-2 output to another monitor. Or you have the HDMI output to another monitor. Or you have our imaging tools, the waveform and the false color mode and all those devices to actually read what the image looks like. This is really powerful. If I have, let's say I'm looking at whatever shot and I go ahead and I put a LUT on it so I can see a normal kind of looking color image. And let's say the window's blown out in the background. I don't need a waveform telling me it's blown out. I'm looking at it, I can see it's blown out. What I really need to know is in the log or the raw, what's that signal like? Do I have detail in there? Do I need to do something about my exposure to try and adjust for it? To have that at a glance without having to swap back and forth and keep tapping the thing to see, you know, that's really powerful. Now, you can make them all the same if you want, so you don't have to like keep track of what's what and stuff. And we have labeling on there, and so you'll always know what the things are. But if you just don't want to worry about that, you can always make them the same. But you can completely separate what they're all doing. So imagine you're using the Odyssey as your on-camera monitor, and you can look, just look at the picture, and that's LUTed, and you can see what that is, and you're fine. And then you have your tools, and your tools are telling you what the log signal is. And so you can see that with knowing what the original signal is about. And then you have SDI output number one, and that's doing the same thing so that an engineer can look at that. And then you have SDI output number two, and it's not LUTed, and it has the tools showing you the not LUT, so you can actually measure what the thing is for whatever use. And then you have HDMI output, and that's going to your client, and they have a LUTed image, but with no tools on the screen, so that they just have a clean, like finished kind of looking picture. You swap and switch this stuff any which way you want. You can, whatever, you know, whatever the way I'm, that's one way of working, but you can have a dozen combinations of different ways you could set that up for whatever makes sense for you in the way that you want to work. So that's a very, very powerful tool. That, I mean, we're talking about replacing an entire cart worth of equipment in this 1-inch thick box, you know.
And that's going to come out when?
That's coming up at the end of the month. That's going to be at the end of the month. Probably for the high frame rates, that's probably going to be in May sometime, end of May likely. And we have another function, which is dual stream. Now, we've been talking about our multi-stream system, having four images at once. We've had that, you know, from the beginning to just for viewing. This is dual stream, has different aspects to it, and some are free, most are free, and then there's some that are paid as well. So first thing in dual stream is a picture-in-picture. You dual stream two images at once, so in two HD video signals. Can take two signals in at once. It can be, one can be SDI, and the other can be either SDI or HDMI, right? Well, however you want to look at it. And you can take those two things at once, and you can look at them like picture-in-picture, so a large and a small frame, and you swap back and forth, or you can have them side-by-side, or you can switch between them, right? So you have two at once. And you can record one of them. So you can be recording one while having looking at a second image. And this is for free. This is no additional charge. Think of this in two different ways you could use this. You're doing a two-camera shoot, you know, one cameraman, but they ask him to do an interview and they get that weird side angle, the interview subject or whatever, or get a reverse shot of the interviewer so they get the every rare time they ask a question. You can have the main camera, the A camera, and it's your monitor and recorder on top of your camera, and then you have the feed going from the other one so you can compare and make sure that the exposure and, you know, framing, whatever, and they match. Fine, that's an easy one. Another one is that a lot of these cameras have multiple outputs, and one of them could be completely clean, just the regular signal, then you record that, and the other one might have like your menu information, your heads-up display with, you know, battery life and where the zoom is and stuff like that. So you could have it on your camera and be viewing that, and so you're setting your shot and having that information up on the screen, but at the same time, the same device is recording a completely clean signal. And it's recording in Apple ProRes, any of the three flavors of Apple ProRes that we currently have available. All of that, no additional charge. That's going to be coming maybe May, maybe June. Also, we will have a record option to it, which is dual stream recording. Record both of them at the same time, two separate 1920 by 1080 video files, right? So in Apple ProRes, each of them their own signal, and you just record it. It's like having two recorders in one. You're recording the two of them simultaneously. If you want to have that, that is a paid upgrade. That's $995 or $99 a day. And get that included. Now, eventually, we'll have that for up to four signals. That'll be the quad version of the multi-stream. When we do that, for a lot of people, two is plenty. But if you want to be able to have the quad, we haven't set a price. We don't know all the different things we're going to add to that functionality. So whatever it is, if you want to upgrade, you'll just pay the difference. So there's no penalty to getting the dual stream because that's all we have available at first. If you want to upgrade, you just pay the difference in price and you're all set. Another thing we're going to do, see, lots of announcements. Another thing we're doing is with the raw signals. Now, with different cameras, FS7, FS700, Alexa, C500, we support the Scion now. They were different bundles. They were different things that you could, a license that you would purchase. So a record option for one would be one price, and a record option for another would be another price. We've eliminated that. It's all one thing now. It's the Odyssey Raw Bundle. One price, $995, gets you all of them. You get to record from any of these cameras. And if we add any in the future, I mean, we just are adding three new cameras in this, you know, we're announcing here today. So if we, as we add more raw cameras, another raw camera comes out that has an output that we can accept and stuff, great. You know, we'll work with the manufacturer. We'll take the signal. It'll be part of that bundle at no additional cost. Once you've bought that bundle, there'll be a firmware update and you'll have access to that one too. That includes when you take the raw and then you turn it into some form of ProRes. Anything that's working with that raw signal, it's all included in the Odyssey Raw Bundle. $9.95 or $99 a day to rent it.
So I actually bought one of the original Odyssey 7Qs, and I used it with my FS700, and I purchased the RAW license for that, so that I could record 4K. And then I also got a GH4 and an A7S, and I knew that I had to get the upgraded 7Q Plus so that I could take the HDMI in, and I got the loyalty upgrade thing, and
took advantage of all our.
I took advantage. Great. I still have a credit, I guess.
Okay.
$500 credit
sitting
in my account. So, for example, say I get a C300 Mark II, which I'm thinking of possibly getting. What would be my path?
Well, what you're saying is you would like to be able to move into having the bundle.
I think so.
And we have not determined exactly how we're going to work it. But we knew it was going to be a question. We were very cognizant of it. We don't want to penalize our early adoptees. So we will have a path. We just have to figure out what it's going to be. And we'll, you know, as soon as we figure out exactly what makes sense and how we're going to make everything work, we'll announce it to everyone. And, you know, we want everyone to have the bundle. We want that's the way to move forward in the future. It's less confusing for them, for us, for everyone. It's just better. You want you to have access. So we'll figure something out, and then we'll let everybody know.
That's great. You know, when I filled out my feedback for what do I think you could actually do in the future, or maybe a new product, I actually said Is there something where you could have like a mini 4K recorder? Something maybe that didn't even have a screen?
You know, it's always possible. And we're looking, you know, when someone says, what's on the horizon? We have so many like possible project things in the works. And everyone gets nervous, like, oh, you're going to replace what you think. Like, no, you're an idiot as a company if you don't think about what you could do next, because everybody else is, you know, so we got to always think about what else we might do. We'll see. We'll see what it might be. The danger, by the way, of having a 4K recorder that doesn't have a screen to keep it small, the danger would be for us, that's our interface, right? We use a touchscreen, so that we'd have to have, you'd have to have some physical other interface, right, to be able to make settings and stuff.
Maybe an iPhone?
Maybe, but who knows? But then the other part, but then you have to like link them together to get it to do stuff. And then the other thing is like, it's nice to be able to see your shot, you know, be able to, it's a really nice monitor too. So who knows? We look at the possibilities of lots of different things. There is one more announcement that we made, and it's a pretty big one. It's a pretty nice one that we have. We make our own SSDs. We have made an OEM manufacturer. And it's never been something that we were like looking to make a lot of money off people with selling them fancy, overpriced SSDs. No, it's not about that at all. It's because we needed drives that would keep up with all the different data rates and all the different functionality that we do. It's your shot. I mean, this is what you're doing everything for. It's got to absolutely work. Never drop a frame. Never have any kind of formatting issue. Just never can't draw too much power. Some SSDs draw four times as much power as others. It's crazy. That generates heat too, and you know other issues. So you just want to make everything absolutely perform, and you just don't ever have to think about it. It has to be totally reliable. So we had to manufacture our own drives. It costs us a lot of money, frankly. I mean, these things are expensive because it costs us a lot to have them, and we have to put out a lot of money. We have to buy huge amounts of them in order to get them to be made for us and stuff. We'd be very happy if there was just some drive that, we can just use these things, and we never have to think about it. What we have now found in our testing, we've discovered there are, in testing, we finally found ones that could keep up to the level of performance that we have in our own drives, that what we need to, that we could say, all right, this works for Odyssey. So Samsung makes the 850 EVO type drive, and they have two sizes that will keep up, which is 500 gig and 1000 gig, so almost a terabyte. And the prices are dramatically less than we charge for ours. Great. With our next firmware, we're going to open up the use of those two drives, only those two. If you stick any other drive in, it'll just say not supported. So we just want to protect you that stuff works. You try and put in a different size of those drives, won't work. Try to put in a similar model, but it's not quite the same, not going to work. Because though we know that those two can do all the different things that we require in a drive to be confident in saying, all right, you can use this and this is going to be supported. So we fully understand that people, they're on a budget, and doing like a long form documentary or doing lots and lots of high speed or whatever, it can get very expensive with lots and lots of media. Sure, we want to be able to open this up to people. And if you're going to go and get the Samsung drive, the only thing that we'll say is that we warranty our own drives because we make them. So it's our product, we stand behind it absolutely. With the Samsung drive, we're not going to totally abandon you. We're going to see if we can help. Nothing goes wrong with these things. Nothing goes wrong anyway. But if ever there was something to go wrong, with our own drives, we'll go crazy doing anything we have to in order to try and, make sure your media is okay and whatever. But with the Samsung drives, we'll do what we can, but we certified the use. We open to the use to these drives. We have qualified them so they can do it. But, the warranty comes from Samsung, not from us at that point, because it's not our product.
Do you actually know what the street prices are on the drives you mentioned?
The 500, I think, is selling for around $250, and the 1,000 is selling for under $400.
That's good.
You're talking about a third of the price of what ours are. Now, if you're a rental house or a government work or a major insurance bond kind of production, then you're gonna use our drives, I imagine, because we warranty them. But if you're an independent filmmaker and stuff, and you're just trying to get something done, please Beam our guests. Use the Samsung drives. They work great. You know, the only difference is that, you know, the little handles that we have that we clip them into the Odyssey, we'll sell those, you know, through our dealer network. You know, haven't set a price, but, you know, you buy a 5-pack of them for a few bucks, kind of. It's not going to be any big deal. And that way you can mount them in the drives and in the Odyssey, and you're all set.
That's great. So I'm asking this of all the manufacturers. What are you the most excited about in this product?
The thing that
personally, what are you most excited about?
What I most excited about in this product? Wow, there's so many things like it. I think the fact that it is everything that we do is on such an absolute professional level. There's nothing kind of science experimenty about it. It kind of works, and you kind of you use it with this caveat of like, well, I know it's kind of no. We are designing a professional. We got a professional tool for professional users. Everyone else can use it too, and we're very happy about it. But we make it for the most demanding client, and we want to make it that way because I can sleep better at night.
That's great. Well, thank you very much, Mitch.
Thank you.
Keith Moreau here with TechMove signing off.
You know, Mitch Gross of Convergent Design, thank you very much, Mitch, for joining us and taking that time out to speak to the TechMove world. He was talking to you, Keith. I mean, you know, what he's saying is that they're making professional stuff for the most discerning user. That's you. He's talking completely about you. So that's got to make you feel good.
It was actually great because I've actually invested a lot in their stuff.
Right.
You know, and there wasn't really a choice back when I first bought it. They were the first people to produce the 4K recorders for the FS700. And they're still pretty rare. But I'm kind of a loyal customer because I waited a long time for actually to be practical, because at first it could only record raw, and that was not very useful because it's just so much data.
We covered that in one of our episodes, and I remember how somewhat distraught you were at that, and you know, you knew there was going to be a fix coming down the road.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, they're here now.
They're here now. And then in about September or so, they were finally coming out with their ProRes version. We're talking September of 2014. They were finally coming out with a ProRes version that recorded ProRes, the 4K, but in ProRes, it was a lot less data. And then it was great. We're going, yes, yes. And then we thought maybe it would also support 4K recording with the HDMI input on the A7S and the GH4. And then they promptly came out with a new model.
Yeah.
The Odyssey 7Q Plus. And then, so all the old 7Q owners were kind of upset because they kind of felt like, oh, great, we have this old thing and it can't even do this.
Kind of like how Apple users are whenever they buy a new iPhone.
Pretty much. Or change the interface.
Right.
But yeah. But actually, Convergent Design was actually pretty stand up about honoring the feelings of the original owners, and they had this loyalty program, which actually turned out pretty good. It was actually a pretty good deal. We could get the new 7Q. They also reduced the price of it by including these hard drives that they used to sell externally for a lot of money, and they actually just threw them in, and they gave us a free update for the recording of RAW on the Odyssey. Because when you buy the Odyssey, it can only record 1080p. It can't record RAW, and you have to actually buy these like licenses to make it record RAW of certain types of cameras. And so I had to pay, I think, another, it was a lot, it was like $700 or something to add the raw recording option to the 7Q. They actually threw that in. If you were a 7Q owner, you could get it upgraded on the 7Q Plus for free if you bought one.
That's a pretty good thing.
Yeah, that was actually really a really nice gesture. And they also gave us a $500 credit for any new licenses in the future. Like if we got another camera that needed to record and then we needed to add that license, we could apply $500 to that license. So it was actually, it was pretty generous.
Cool.
I think they did what they could. Yeah.
Hey, There was one thing he mentioned, you know, out of the many things he mentioned within the interview. What in the world is 3D LUTs? I don't know what LUTs is.
It's
it's
one more D than a 2D LUT.
Right. And my math skills aren't that great, but that I understood. But what in the world is a LUT?
A LUT stands for look up table, LUT.
Hmm.
And okay. It's basically a way of mapping one color to another color, or one value in a image to a color. So so what happens is when you record in a log format, if you actually look at that log format, so log is kind of it's a way of increasing the dynamic range of a image. It's not really recording reality. It's actually changing it so that the deficiencies of the recording format are kind of canceled out by the log format. So it's just a way of recording more values in a certain area than in another area. But if you actually look at it, it looks bad. It looks kind of almost like a black and white TV screen. Like if you show this log file to your clients, they'll fire you. So you have to, before you show it to your clients,
right,
or before you really work on it, you need to apply a LUT, and it basically just kind of reverses the curve. So it takes, so log is not reality. It kind of reverses that log to make it look real again, kind of like you recorded it. And the 3D LUT is just a more advanced way of mapping. Has more values associated with each color. So it can be more complicated.
So there always was just a 1 LUT, 2 LUT, now there's the 3D LUT.
The 2D LUTs are actually the more common ones because they're easier to implement in computers. 3D LUTs just require more computing power to display them, but they're actually even more accurate. So it's better to have a 3D LUT if you can afford it.
So basically what
happens is if you actually look at the monitor when you're in log format, if you look at your little like LCD screen, it looks bad and it's really hard to focus too because everything's kind of washed out, so there's very little contrast. So what you do is you run it through the Convergent Design Odyssey 7Q and you apply this LUT, and you can apply it to whatever camera LUT that you're using. So there might be a Sony S-Log LUT or an S-Log 2 LUT. So you apply that, and then it actually reverses what the camera is applying and makes it look kind of real, so you can actually look at it and say, yeah, that actually looks good, instead of, I can't tell if it's good or not.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then also if your clients are seeing it, like if they're behind you watching you, you want to click that on so they don't fire you.
So it looks fairly decent when they're looking at it, because they don't know what's happening anyway.
Right. Mm-hmm. What's kind of interesting, though, is that in recent years, recording low contrast is kind of a way to get more dynamic range out of something, and then later you reverse it and make it look sharper and more deeper blacks. But a lot of people didn't bother to change to reverse that and kind of make it look more real, and so people kind of got used to this very low contrast look, almost like a log look, and a lot of people even like that now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just. Because it seems like it looks more like film or something. So it's just basically the blacks are a little bit, are gray instead of really black. That's one way of kind of looking at it.
That's so funny. Now they're getting to the point where it could look super, like super black, you know, that mirror black, right? But we don't want that anymore. We want to go back to like dull gray. It's awesome.
Yeah. So anyway, so that's kind of the background of the LUT. So, that's actually a very, very nice feature.
Cool. Yeah. Excellent. All right. Well, let us again thank Mitch Gross, Convergent Design, and let's give them a little plug here. You'll find them on their website, convergent-design.com. And you can read all about the cool Odyssey 7Q Plus and all their other neat products that they have there. Keith, thanks a lot.
You're welcome, Rob.
And we'll come back with more right here on Tech Move. We are now going to be entering into the world of Canon, And Canon was, of course, very well represented at NAB 2015. And we had a chance to speak to a gentleman there by the name of Paul McNiff. Keith, how was that going into the Canon booth? That must have been fun.
It was crazy. It was, yeah, actually, I was lucky.
All the millions of people were at that booth, right? Just trying to get in a look.
Yeah, it was crazy. The XC10 wasn't quite as popular as the C300 Mark II.
Right.
The C300 Mark II, they only had a couple, it seemed like, in the booth, and everybody wanted to see it. The XC10 is a kind of a cool, a nice camera. It's very small, and I felt like since I was at the booth, I probably should also talk about this new camera.
Well, you know what? Frankly, when I was watching the interview, that was almost something that I might actually kind of like.
I think it's a strong possibility.
Yeah.
When it's over, when the interview's over, we can talk a little bit more about it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. So let's listen to everything that surrounds the Canon XC10. This is Paul McNiff of Canon, and of course Keith Moreau of TechMove.
Hi, this is Keith Moreau with TechMove with a revolutionary new camera by Canon, the XC10. We have Paul McNiff here with Canon.
This is the XC10. So, with the C300 Mark II, we kind of gave everybody everything they asked for. This was really surprising to those of us in the company because this was stuff nobody knew that they wanted, and it's the most fantastic. I'll call it sort of a hybrid of a PowerShot point and shoot, an SLR, and a cinema camera. It's very unique. So it has a 1-inch sensor, and it will record 4K. It also uses CFast cards, just like the C300. It uses the same codec. It doesn't have as high of a bit rate. It's only 305 megabits per second, and it only does UHD, so it'll do 3840 by 2160.
How about the bit depth?
The bit depth is only 8-bit, and it's a 422. It's a fairly inexpensive camera at $2,500. The sensor allows you to shoot that 1-inch sensor, which is a very interesting size because it's larger than 2/3, but it's obviously smaller than Super 35. It fits into really, really interesting places. Somebody asked me the other day, they said, well, where do you think this camera fits? And I said, well, look at it. It fits almost anywhere. For example, in the film that we're showing here that was shot by Gail Tattersall, they used it. There's a scene where they're playing a game of pool. They actually mounted this on the front of the pool cue to get the pool cue's POV shot when they were hitting some of the balls. The lens is 24 to 240. Now, it does ramp rather quickly, but it really only ramps two stops. It's 2.8 to 5.6. One of the great features about it here is this piece can be removed, and this is included. It's got a regular LCD on the back, like you would expect from a camera like this. But having this piece here allows you to shoot outdoors. So, you know, you can't really see the LCD screen when you're out in the sunshine. It also shoots still images. Now, this is where I say that it's kind of similar to an SLR because it will shoot 12 megapixel stills and it has a mechanical shutter. So it's not just like a power shot where you're doing, you know, just that little scan.
So I asked you about the Canon C300 Mark II. What's the most exciting thing for you about this camcorder?
Oh, everything about this, the fact that it exists. It was such an unexpected thing, and then it's just really, really cool. Being able to shoot UHD on something and 12 megapixel stills. It's not shipping until June, and I'm going on vacation in May, so that's my biggest disappointment about it.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Paul.
No problem. Thank you.
Keith Moreau here with TechMove at the Canon booth, signing off.
Paul McNiff of Canon talking about the XC10. And hey, Keith, you know, I got to tell you that this is something that has kind of sparked my interest. You know, reason being, let's face it, I'm too cheap to buy, a 5D Mark 20. You know, that's going to be, you know, coming out. And, you know, my price point is going to be, you know, the GH4 type of thing. But this is going to kind of be right in that wheelhouse. You know, your thoughts?
My thoughts are that I think jury's out until we actually get a chance to use it.
Yeah.
You know, it's on paper, it doesn't look that great. It's just kind of like a weird camcorder that does 4K.
I do think the weird thing is that I think it's a fixed lens. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's a fixed lens.
Yeah, that kind of sucks.
It's actually pretty good range. It's like a 24 to 240 millimeter range, which is actually quite a bit for a large sensor camera. But yeah, it's not that large of a sensor camera. So it's a 1-inch sensor. So it's actually smaller than a Micro Four Thirds. So all the things that we want in a, you know, the reason we film with a DSLR is for the large sensors.
Right.
And so...
So you don't think this will not have that?
In order to get that kind of shallow depth of field, you're going to have it wide open on its lens, and that would be a wide angle. So you're not really going to get shallow depth of field on wide angle. It's much harder to get that.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have to maybe zoom in, and that's the only way you're going to have to... That's the only way you're going to be able to get that really shallow depth of field, and it's not even going to be that shallow.
Right, right,
even when you zoom in. So it's kind of like almost like the old camcorder days where the only way you could emulate that out-of-focus background...
Is to zoom in.
Would be to zoom in. So it kind of... And so they actually had... So I went to the Canon Theater where they actually played sample films of the C300 Mark II and this camera. They played this one second. It was actually a really great, funny film. It was about this old man who's obviously a young person in makeup beating up these criminals on the street and doing all these, I don't know what it's called, but you know when they like run up the stairs and do all these acrobatics and jump and
isn't that like streets. Urban ninja type of
stuff? Yeah, it was like urban ninja,
right, which I do on Tuesdays.
I know you do that.
Thank you.
But so you probably could find this film. I don't know what it's called, but it's probably out there, or at least after NAB, it might be out there.
Okay.
But so I looked, and it looked good. It actually didn't look bad.
Shot with the XC10.
Correct. Okay. Yeah, it was completely shot with the XC10. It was very professionally done. I mean, it could have been something you saw on TV, you know, like on a TV, like episodic TV. There wasn't really any of that nice, creamy, shallow depth of field. Okay. That we like in our DSLRs and the large sensors. So it looked okay. Obviously, it can shoot a professional film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who knows what other support gear they had. But so I think until I get one in my hands, film it and film with it and look at it, for me, jury's out. For me, almost I'd rather just get a 4K, you know, small Sony camcorder because it's smaller and, you know, cheaper to use.
So would this kind of go, maybe this, they're marketing against like the Panasonic, not the GH4, but that other one that we were talking about. I forgot what it's called. The other 4K, kind of point and shoot that they have.
LX100 or something.
Yeah. Something like that.
Actually, it's probably competing more against the GH4 cause it's more in the price range. Cause the GH4 is more like 1600.
Yeah.
And this is like 2400, maybe right. Street price will be less.
Right.
So they probably are kind of aiming at the GH4 market.
Yeah.
I think it's actually almost a direct aim at them. Now, in a way, the only way that it's going to beat the GH4 is the image quality. That's the only way it's going to beat it, because in almost every other way, I don't think it's going to beat it. Like light sensitivity, any kind of video assist aids, you know, in-camera recording on SD cards, you're not going to be able to do that on this one. This one, you have to use a CFast card, I think.
Correct.
So we'll see. But, you know, that's the thing about Canon. They release stuff that doesn't seem that great on paper, but then when you actually use it, it's superb. It's like it makes you just have to buy it. So we'll see.
So the thing we're kind of wondering is whether or not it's going to have just that trademarked Canon look right out of the box.
Correct.
Yeah.
And the trademark look that I'm talking about is from a large sensor.
Right.
So
which this is definitely not going to give you, but we'll see what they come up with.
Yeah, we'll see.
All right. All right, good. That is again Paul McNiff from Canon. Okay, thanks a lot, Keith, for talking about the XC10. And we'll come back with more right here on Tech Move. I have to imagine that pretty much 80 to 90% of the patrons visiting NAB 2015 were there to see the C300 Mark II. The Canon booth must have been incredible. How in the world did you score an interview with Paul McNiff of Canon? And I mean, like, I know Tech Move has a pretty large cachet, but I just didn't realize that, you know, we could get that kind of momentum going.
Tech Move has some...
You greased a lot of palms, didn't you? You greased a lot of palms. Yeah, right.
We're heavy hitters. When they see us with that iPad, the DIY cord, and the 30-year-old mic, they clear their boards. They kick out NBC, CBS, and the other CNET and all the
Dan, rather you sit over there. We got Keith Moreau from Tech Move for you right now. Is my makeup okay?
So actually, yeah, I went there Monday and I tried to, I went up to, they have this kind of nice little kind of welcome kiosk where there's obviously just people there to kind of direct you. And I just said, hey, you know, we want to interview somebody high powered about the Canon C300 Mark II. And they said, okay, do you have a card? And
he said, yeah, I can make one. Can I go to the bathroom and get a square, please?
And they said, no, it's okay. Just write it on this pad. So, yeah, those Tech Move cards are, they got lost in the mail. But I have to reorder them.
That's right.
I give out so many, I just run out all the time. But
I'm always trying for the free lunches at McDonald's, so I throw it into the fishbowl.
So, I wrote it on the little note, and this lady took it, and I got her name, and I always photographed the badges of the people I talked to, so I can remember them later.
Cool.
But so then I came back like an hour later, and the note was kind of one of those pink, like, call memo things.
Sure.
Forms. It was just still there, right where I left it. And so I talked to somebody again, and just actually I think it was just kind of lucky, but behind sitting kind of resting was a guy that, like, a really high powered guy. And he kind of got interested and he had a SLR in his hand, and so we started talking, and he started helping me. He said, "Yeah, we'll get you somebody." So so he and another person arranged and look at the schedule, and they had this very high tech schedule. It's just like a big paper spreadsheet with all kinds of wrinkles. It was like 3 feet long, and that they pulled out with all the different interviews that they had scheduled for this camera, and it was like 100. There was like 100 interviews scheduled, and finally we got a block in, and I think it was like 11:30 on Tuesday was our block.
Wow.
So so we showed up a little bit early, got there. There was one. So what they usually do is they have these PR guys that kind of intercept you. You don't go directly to the interviewee. You kind of go to this PR person first, and then they kind of intercept you and kind of talk to you and make sure you're okay. And then they find the right guy for you. So they found this guy, Paul McNiff, who's great. He's a nice person. He's very humble, and yet he's extremely knowledgeable.
Yeah. He seems really super up on the product.
Yeah. So he said, what do you want to, I said, I definitely want to do the C300 Mark II. And he says, I said, we need to go, you know, where the camera is. And so they had actually kind of a set there. A lot of the video manufacturers have kind of one or two sets where it's really well lit, and they actually have these actors like repeating the same moves and doing stuff like over and over again, like, you know, cutting something in the kitchen, and, you know, and these, it must be like the most boring job ever, but
they're probably getting paid pretty well to do it too.
Yeah. And so there was a C300 Mark II kind of pointed at the scene, and it was actually one of the few places that it was somewhat lit, where I could actually stand there with Paul and we could be kind of lit and actually record at the same time and see the camera. So we found this one spot, and there were just all these people there. And then actually the PR guy was with me for a while. We were talking and waiting in line, and then all these people started coming in front of us to look at the C300 Mark II, which was on a tripod, just kind of pointing at the scene. And Paul came, and we waited about maybe 5 or 10 minutes for Paul. And by that time, there were all these people in front of us. And then we just kind of waited with Paul until these people went away, because it would have been impolite to like kick them out. And finally, we were down to the last couple people that were just kind of looking at the camera. And it just seemed like they wanted to spend like their whole day looking at this camera.
Oh, I'll bet.
In front of us. They were just talking and this and that. And
sure.
And finally, the PR guy just said, I think I'm going to have to kick him out. So he went over and just talked to them. They were kind of nonplussed, but since he was a Canon rep, they left. And we finally got to the C300 Mark II.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
That is great. That's great. Well, this is a coup for Tech Move. Yeah. So,
One thing I want to mention, Paul actually made a little mistake when the first thing he said out of his mouth was that it records 2K internally.
Right. And I remember that.
Yeah. It actually records 4K internally. So
I was kind of thinking, is that something we want to promote?
Yeah. And I didn't want to just say, you mean 4K, right, Paul? Like right in front of him, in front of his boss. And all, I didn't want to.
Oh, right.
Actually, it was funny because while we were waiting, this PR guy, who was a nice guy, but I didn't really think he was necessary. And so you don't have to be here, right, during the interview. Because, it's like the more people around, the more supervision, it seems like you might get a little uncomfortable, Paul might. And he says, no, that's I don't need to be here. I said, because, you don't need to supervise Paul, right? And I said, because when you leave, I'm going to ask him all the dirt. And then he said, I'm going to be staying.
That's great.
Yeah. So, but actually, Paul did great. Just that one thing, it's actually 4K internally, and that's the only thing. So don't be confused when you hear that.
Okay. All right. Great. Great to know. Mm-hmm. Good. Let's get to the interview right now. Paul McNiff of Canon, along with Keith Moreau of Tech Move.
Hi, this is Keith Moreau here with TechMove, and we're here with the highly anticipated interview with Paul McNiff of Canon, and we're going to talk about the new C300 Mark II. Paul?
I didn't know I was highly anticipated. Okay, so the C300 Mark II, obviously the most exciting and spoken of advancement from this Mark II, is going to be that it shoots 2K internally. It does that using our new codec, which is an MPEG-4 variant. It's our version of the AVC codec, what we call XF-AVC. Maximum bit rate on that is going to be 410 megabits per second. That's going to be 10-bit as well. It's also going to carry over the other things that were done in the C500 externally. It'll do 2K at 10-bit. It'll also do 2K at 12-bit. Now, the 10-bit will be RGB 444. The 12-bit is going to be 422.
So what are the different resolutions that we can record internally, from the highest to the lowest?
That would be, you can do 4K DCI, 4096 by 2160. You can do UHD, 3840 by 2160. You can do 2K, 10 or 12-bit, and then you can also do HD, 1920 by 1080.
So prior to this interview, we were talking about the new Canon sensor, newly designed Canon sensor. Why don't you talk about that?
Right. Well, we've got three different things that pertain to exposure capability. So I'll go a little bit beyond the sensor in this answer. I'll give you some meat here. So we have a new sensor that allows for expanded ISO. We've got a new gamma curve that allows for expanded dynamic range. And then we have a new filter system that allows for expanded neutral density, and they all work together. Starting with the sensor gathers more light. So one of the things that we did in order to make it gather more light was we took the micro lens on each photo site. So what we call a pixel on a sensor isn't really a pixel. Pixel is short for picture element. So it's really not a pixel until it's turned into an actual image. We just call it that because it's easier to speak of it that way. The photo site has inside of it a photodiode. In the case of Canon sensors on Cinema EOS cameras, we have the dual pixel autofocus system. Again, it's really not dual pixel, but it's two photodiodes in there. Now, I'll talk about the focusing system later, but one of the things that we did on this was we took the micro lens. So on each one of these photodiodes, or pixels, if you will, or these photo sites, there's a little tiny piece of glass called a micro lens. We've redesigned those so that all of the light that enters through that photo site is going to go, well, not all necessarily, but substantially more, is going to reach that photodiode. Because even in that very, very tiny environment, it's not the entire bottom of that photo site that is a diode that's going to be absorbing light. So there's certainly going to be a little bit of fall off. You may remember a few years back on, say, the 7D, the original 7D, one of the advancements was the gapless micro lens, so there was no fall off in between the photo sites. This is kind of doing the same thing internally. So because of that, it absorbs more light. If it absorbs more light, that means that there's less noise because there's less gain that has to be added when you go into higher ISOs. So it's got much better low light performance because it's a brand new sensor. Up to this point, the C100, 100 Mark II, 300, and 500 all had the same sensor. Now this has got the next generation. Along with that, we've got expanded ISO. The ISO now goes up to 100 and 2,400. Now, I'm not going to tell you there's no noise in that because it's 102,400. But, like I said, the performance is much better in terms of reducing the noise at higher ISOs. We also expanded the ISO in the other direction. Previously, you couldn't go any lower than 320. Now you can go down to 100. So the new gamma curve plays into this ISO advancement. The new gamma curve, which is our log 2 curve, that allows for 15 stops of dynamic range, whereas previously we only had 12. 15 makes it a high dynamic range camera. This is now an HDR device. Here's the thing. The base ISO is 800. Previously, it was the optimal ISO is 850, which allowed you your best performance above and below 18% gray, which is how we judge our exposure index. When you're down at 100 ISO on the Mark II, you're going to have more detail in the dark areas, whereas the detail in the highlight areas of that 15 stops of dynamic range doesn't reach its peak performance until you get to 800. Well, if you're in a really highly lit environment, let's say you're shooting on a beach outdoors and you're shooting wide open because you want a shallow depth of field, which is the way a lot of people shoot, especially when they're doing cinema, you're going to want to maintain that highlight detail. So you're going to want the performance that you get from our dynamic range at 800 or higher. So in order to help manage that without having to put any accessories on the camera, we took our existing neutral density system filter system, which was really well received. The reason it was really well received was because we didn't do any layering of filters in it. We had an individual 2-stop, 4-stop, and 6-stop filter instead of putting pieces of glass in front and behind each other. Those were all on one filter wheel. Well, now we've taken them and split them among two filter wheels. So we still have an individual 2, 4, and 6-stop filter, but we've got clear windows on some of those wheels. So you can now take the 6-stop and layer it with the 2-stop so you have 8 stops, then layer it with the 4-stop so you get a maximum of 10 stops of neutral density so that you can use 15 stops of dynamic range at 800 ISO in most situations. I mean, if you need more neutral density, that's what filters are for. That's why filter companies exist.
I actually read about that, and I had a little bit of questions, a few questions about how the two work together. Is, for example, if I just have an L series lens, EF lens on it, Will the dual neutral densities work seamlessly?
I'm not quite sure I understand what you mean by seamlessly.
I thought there was some type of additional back focus required when you had the two in there. Maybe it was just my misunderstanding.
You do have to go into the menu, and you have to expand the neutral density system.
So say I just had the single wheel on, the primary neutral density wheel in. If I wanted to go to the higher neutral density with the secondary wheel, I'd have to go into the menu system?
Well, actually, the 6-stop filter is on the second wheel. It's an electronic system, so you're just hitting these buttons here. In order to get them to start to layer with each other, that's when you have to go into the menu and just turn on that feature.
Got it.
Otherwise, they'll work independently. The camera will know that you want, when you go from 4 to 6, it has to give you a clear window and then the 6-stop filter.
Gotcha. So I actually have some external recorders. Can you talk about the external recording capabilities?
Well, externally, it's going to put out 4K RAW or 2K uncompressed, HD uncompressed, or you can do anything really that you could have done in the 500, but you get more dynamic range. You don't have as many frame rates. As far as which recorders are going to be compatible, there are cameras out there that already accept our RMF files, which is our raw media format. That's what the extension stands for. It always takes time when a new device comes out for those manufacturers to have them talk back and forth to each other. I do know that we have a film that we're showing here in our 4K, 2K HD theater that shows all sorts of different things, but we had a short film that was shot by Gail Tattersall using this camera as well as the XC10, and I know for this they were using a codex recorder on that. So I know that the codex has already at least worked with us to make that compatible. How much the other ones have The other manufacturers, such as Convergent Design and AJA, how compatible they are at this point remains to be seen, but they're all going to get on board with it because they've been really good partners with us previously on the C500.
That's great. Paul, what is, for you, the most exciting thing about this new camera?
I don't know. Maybe that you can light up the buttons. I mean, it's a simple thing, but if you have a camera that you can use to shoot in the dark, you should be able to see the buttons in the dark. That's a simple thing, but, you know, in many ways, I'm a simple man. A lot of the ergonomics of it, things that really need to be on the outside, accessible on the camera, changing my gain with the push of a button, my shutter with the push of a button, having a start-stop here that's bright red and I can see it when I'm an AC standing over here and I have to operate it that way. Those little things get me really excited. Recording internally 4K to the CFast cards, that's hugely exciting. I think, though, the best feature about it is the 15 stops of dynamic range. Because we've had people go, really? 15 stops? And then everybody who's worked on our short film and who's really seen the camera perform, they're like, yeah, 15 stops. It's great. And that's a lot. And that's one of the big things at the show right now. We've also got advanced color spaces in this. So we have Rec 2020. We have our proprietary cinema gamut, which is designed to encompass all of the color space that is within some of the more popular film stocks that have a long legacy in the cinema industry. So if you want to kind of match to that, we've got a color space that allows for that. You can shoot P3. You can, of course, shoot 709 if that's what your project calls for. We have matrix and gamma combination settings that allow you to match to specific cameras. Now, that's of course going to take color grading, but if you take the C300, even though it was only an 8-bit camera, it was used alongside as a B, C camera with the Alexa an awful lot. And, you know, I mean, there's no question that the Alexa is right now the number one camera being used in most projects. And even with 8-bit, they were able to match the color very, very closely, which led to a lot of the success for the C300 in that kind of an environment. We've got different matrix settings now, and I kind of got to use the cheat sheet. I can't give you the exact details on which combinations do what, but we do have combinations that you use this matrix and this other setting when you want to match to an Alexa. Use this one when you want to match to Sony or the Ikigami large sensor cameras, etc.
That's great, Paul. Well, you've given us at TechMove an amazing amount of information. I really appreciate your time.
All right, thank you very much. We appreciate you coming by the booth.
Keith Moreau with TechMove signing off.
Well, Keith, you've seen it up in person. You've talked about it ad nauseum. What are your thoughts? C300.
Well, you know, it's one of those things where I probably would buy it if it was cheaper. Like, it would be a no-brainer.
Right.
But I still have to, I'm going to have to test it. I'm going to have to maybe rent one when it comes out and just try it out and see how, you know, how ergonomic it is. And I think it's pretty ergonomic. I think it might be a little heavy for some of the stuff I do. Like this, I use the C100 right now and it's pretty light. I think this is appreciably heavier and a little bit bulkier. So, you know, I think, you know, as with the XC10, jury's still out. I know the image is going to be superb. Now it's just the other stuff, like the image, the workflow, the built-in NDs, two sets of NDs, which is amazing. That's actually really useful. And the codec and the 10-bit recording and the raw output, which will work with my Odysseys. I mean, there's a lot of pluses. The only things that I really need to decide on are ergonomics. Like, is it going to work for me in the way that I use the C100? Is it going to be as versatile? Or is it just going to be a little bit too heavy? But, you know, if money was not an obstacle and the ergonomics are okay, it would be a definite buy. So I'm just going to have to see.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, we want to thank again Paul McNiff of Canon for joining us there. Keith, let's talk about kind of like our takeaways from NAB 2015 as we wrap up the show today. What'd you come away with? What was the most memorable thing? Was it the C300 Mark II, seeing it there? You know, was it getting a hot dog, but, you know, by the restrooms? You know, what was it?
I think the takeaway was, get a press pass. It's awesome.
Don't be like one of those commoners.
No, be a regular person. You got to be press.
I'll bet it's hard to really enjoy those things that you got to see if you weren't press. You know, like you don't. I mean, you get to look at the new stuff. Okay, great. You get to look at it. You get to read their brochures on this stuff, but you don't get to interact with some of those people that are in there and find out some of those great features that pretty much only they know because they've been working with the thing.
Yeah, I felt it was pretty cool. I felt kind of special in a way. I mean, more than just an average customer. Not that people don't treat people well. But it was pretty cool to have kind of a mission.
Sure.
And then the mission was investigating this gear that I personally was really interested in.
Yes.
It's like a lot of reporters, I think they just, they have to, they're assigned and they have to do it and they may or may not be that interested. In this case, it was kind of like a dream assignment. Thanks. Thanks, Rod.
Oh, yeah. You're very welcome. Here's one thing that I remember you and I talking offline about this. And that is, you probably needed at least another day there.
Yeah, I think if I go there next year, it's going to be the whole time. Yeah, there just wasn't enough time to... There was just a lot of stuff I didn't have a chance to see. Like, I remember in the preview, I talked about the... I wanted to check out some of the LED lighting.
Right.
Didn't get a chance to see it.
Yeah, none at all.
Zero. I mean, I saw it shining in my eyes and blinding me, but as I passed. But other than that, I didn't see it.
Hey, those are good lights. They're blinding me. Let me turn over here.
Yeah. I wanted to see a lot more of the gimbals. I actually wanted to go to the booth, the Kame TV booth, because I have a Kame gimbal, and I didn't get a chance to go there. When I first went there, they're all setting up, and I didn't want to bother them. And then I didn't get a chance to go back. There were just a bunch of... I didn't really even get a chance to go to the JVC booth at all. I know they have some good camcorders. I didn't get a chance to look at the new Panasonic 4K, larger handycam size. I think it's the HVX 200 or something like that. Anyway, it's their 4K kind of smaller camcorder. So there was just tons of stuff I didn't get to see.
Too much stuff, too little time.
Yeah. But I also...
The age-old saying.
But it was really also great to have Veronica along. She just was a trooper. She helped. I couldn't have done it without her. So I just wanted to thank her on the air.
Thank you very much, Veronica, for being there and holding the camera as steady as she did. She did a great job. She really did a fantastic job. And we do owe a lot of these interviews to her and her production there. So we'll give her credit. And, thank you for... being available, Veronica. We appreciate that.
Thanks, Veronica.
Yep. All right. Fantastic. Let us... My head is spinning from all these interviews. My head is spinning. I need a break. Hopefully not too long of a break, like meaning we won't record another show for a year. We'll get one done pretty soon. Because we still have a lot to talk about, especially things that you've gotten, even before NAB that we want to talk about. Plus, I want to talk about a couple of things that I've picked up along the way.
Great.
As well.
Great.
Okay. Yep. Keith, thank you so much.
You're welcome, Rod.
Listening audience, thank you so much for joining us. Again, you can always find us on the web, techmovepodcast.com. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us on, Stitcher. They can find us on Facebook. All those things. We're all over the place. We're internationally known. Why do you think we were able to be at NAB 2015? Internationally known, folks. All right. I'm going to go get something to drink. I'm going to go get something to eat. I'm exhausted. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening. It's been a pleasure. We will see you next time on another great episode of Tech Move.